skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 89 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And the last podcast, I would say, was Swearfest 2018. So should we try and reduce the swearing this time round, chaps?
Fuck that.
Brilliant. Ruined.
That's it. No. I will. From now on, that's it.
I was going to be a Disney princess about it, but damn.
That is not in your makeup to be a Disney princess, my dear.
Not, is it? The worst.
Let's tell them what we've got coming up on the show.
All right. So we're going to kick off the episode with our top three worst on-screen chemistry. I love bile. And we're going to be talking a lot of it.
It feels like a long time since we've had a good rant as well. I like those topics.
Today's the day.
We're also going to have a rewatch of Pulp Fiction. So probably one of the biggest, best films ever made.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's in my top five films of all time. So there's a little hint as to what I'm going to be thinking about it.
It's in my top 10. Yeah.
It's definitely in my top 10.
Our main review this time round is Oscar player I, Tonya. We've been lucky enough to go to an advanced screening, so listen out for that.
And our movie masturbate this time around. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. It gets bigger each episode, but this one, Sir Harrison Ford.
I genuinely don't think we can get much bigger.
I know.
But yeah. Stick around.
Hey, don't be cocky, kid.
Talking about cocky and kids, our last ever round of Box Office Brawl, and this is the decider. And we've had a lot of team games, we've had a lot of rivalry, but this is the one that I think most people at home are tuning in for, to find out if team, what are we going to be called?
Team Mooch?
Mooch, yeah, Moochie Moocher.
Team Pooch and Mark. Team Pork, I like.
I like, yeah.
Pork will do.
Team Pork, can they beat Barky Bark? Jesus Christ.
I can't even remember what we scored. Did anyone?
Quite a lot.
Yeah.
You're in the lead.
Yeah, but with what?
By 1 point. At 13, I think it was.
Yes.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, that'll be all right.
We make the rules.
And then, of course, we'll have all the usual goodies that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll take listener questions, we'll give away some great prizes, and we'll be giving you our pop culture recommendations of the week in our feature, Skip to the Recommend. Before we get into it, though, there's just something I want to talk about. Today is the day after the Super Bowl, and as you guys in the room know, and as I'm sure you guys listening at home know, one of the biggest parts of the Super Bowl isn't the American football itself at all. It's the trailers. Movie companies, product, you know, placement companies, they spend millions upon millions of dollars to get these 30-second ad spaces to be put on during the Super Bowl because it's the most watched thing on TV of the year. Mm-hmm. And yesterday we had something of a game changer when it comes to a Super Bowl advert. So for the last few months, people have been talking about this new Cloverfield film that was coming out, and no one knew what it was called, no one knew when it was actually going to be released. All of a sudden, midway through the Super Bowl, an advert pops up for Netflix saying, "The Cloverfield Paradox, released today, tune in after the Super Bowl." Boom.
That's nuts.
Game changed.
I do believe that the marketing team need a lot of credit for that. Because in this day and age, to hide anything, like any set pictures or anything, is ridiculous. Because you get anyone tweeting it or Facebooking or Instagram. To keep it under wraps and just announce it overnight, and then it's, you wake up today and it's there. It fucks up our schedule a little bit.
Swearing.
Sorry, okay. It messes up our schedule. Because I was looking forward to reviewing
that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks, Netflix.
It takes us back to when we were kids, when you just go to a cinema, you maybe get like a 10-second clip on TV, and you've no idea what you're going to walk into. This excites me.
Yeah, it's crazy. Admittedly, the reviews, first few reviews that have snuck out have said it's not a very good film.
Shame.
But that's by the by. It's a crazy bit of marketing. And Netflix never released their numbers, but I imagine this will have done huge numbers with that kind of surprise, boom, here you go, watch this after the Super Bowl.
We embrace this.
I'm thinking next year we need to do an advert for the podcast on the halftime show sort of thing.
Yeah, have you got $5 million to throw around?
We could just get JT to wear one of our t-shirts or something.
Yeah, he'll do that.
He looked like he needed a better t-shirt than the one he was wearing. That was ridiculous.
What was he wearing?
And a better PA system, because there were a lot of errors.
Not good.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't one of our teas, so I'm not happy.
Then I'm not interested. Next!
Let's get started.
So we're going to start the episode with our top three worst on-screen chemistry. Now, often when we watch a film, there has been some in the past where we've just gone, what the hell were they thinking, pairing those two people up? Well, this is the topic where we get to spit lyrical on our favourite worst people. Hooray! Hate, 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 hate.
Let's be a little bit nice. Because we're known we'll for see. Being nice, we'll but see. Not too cruel.
So, Mark, I would love to hear your first choice for this hateful project.
50 Shades of Grey.
Same here.
Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan. Lamey Dornan, that's what it should be called. You didn't have to actually sit through this film when we reviewed it. This was in the old days when you weren't part of the podcast. And I think me and Ben should have an award for that, because sitting through this tripe was the worst 2 hours spent of this podcasting life.
Yeah. This and Grimsby.
Yeah. That's the worst time spent.
They should totally like hook up and do like a dual movie.
I will not take anything away from the fact that these two are very pretty people. That's why they got cast. But the chemistry itself was diabolical. There was nothing erotic. They never looked like they actually had any feelings for each other. It was stale from the moment they came on screen. This was supposed to be the big film that every sort of woman was fantasizing over, because they purchased the book. It was one of the biggest selling books of all time, and this film was going to break records. I thought it might be the one that tops Avatar. I think it wasn't far off. It took loads and loads of money, but the moment, oh god, it's making me revisit those memories of sitting in the cinema. It was horrible. And they're not bad actors. I've seen them in other things where they're actually all right. There's one that I think it's called The Fall.
That's Jamie Dornan, isn't it?
And he's absolutely fantastic in that with Gillian Anderson. Mm-hmm. But in this, he just left his ability at the door. And the moment he set eyes on her, you're thinking, right, they're going to have some sort of spark. They just looked bored. You could see they're just sitting there ready for the paycheck. The film itself is rubbish, but I've never been so let down in my life. It was just trash. Wasn't it? It was appalling. If it had been like good actors and you thought, well, say you had Leonardo DiCaprio and Margot Robbie, at least those two would give a performance. Even if the story's rubbish and the whole film's tacky, those two would have put an effort in. In this, no skill, nothing. They shouldn't even have been paid for it. It was appalling.
The reason why I think that they have no chemistry whatsoever, it's not that, you know, they came across well in their audition or they were the best people for the job and it just didn't work out. I think they were the only two people on earth willing to be in this piece of shit. So they were just stuck with it. They were like, well, this is all we're going to get. We'll just have to take it.
Charlie Hunnam was originally supposed to be Christian Grey, but thankfully he saw the ship was sinking, so he decided to abandon ship. But I've seen better sexual chemistry in a cup of tea brewing.
You're saying no one would have done it, Ben, but surely Nicolas Cage would have done it. Or Bruce Willis right now.
He was on his jollies.
Yeah.
That's a film I'd have watched.
That would be brilliant. That would be
Bruce
incredible.
Bruce Willis and Nicolas
Cage.
Yes.
Yes!
Yeah.
That's
going to
be our first Skip to the End Productions movie. That would be good.
I want this now. But it's just, like you said, it's supposed to be the story of sexual awakening and experimentation that ridiculously and bafflingly results in true love for both of these characters. But no, it's a piss poor film by a piss poor author who I don't know how she even got the contract to write a piss poor book. It is just diabolical. This is not what women want. Well, it's not what I want.
No. No, I think you're the voice for most women out there who watch good films.
But women are dirty.
Yeah.
Fact.
And fact. Not dirty enough in this.
No, but Jamie Dornan has no charisma, no presence, and I'll give Dakota Johnson, I was going to say Fanning then, definitely not her, but Dakota Johnson, I will give her credit. She actually looks like she tries, but it's that old saying, you can't polish a turd, can you?
We're doing well at not swearing much. I think we're five minutes in, lots of pisses, shits, the F word.
Yeah.
Good start. I like it. Yeah.
Strong start.
We were about 18 fucks deep at this point in the last one, though.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Let's not waste any more time on this. Let's go to Ben.
Go on, Ben.
Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman in
Me
Star
too.
Wars.
Yes, I've got
Clones.
It.
Good God Almighty.
the sigh.
Portman tried her best, but Hayden Christensen is such a useless actor that it's like trying to generate chemistry with the length of 2x4. And it's amazing how a great actor like Portman can be made to look like shit just by being alongside him. She becomes shit by proxy, even though she herself is clearly very good. She's won awards. In their defence, the dialogue they were working with was atrocious. Oh. So to use Gemma's phrase just then, they were attempting to polish a turd also. And I suppose they did the very best with what they could do. But it's just so upsetting to me to watch this film. Even if it wasn't Star Wars, even if it wasn't something that we'd built up to be so big, if it was just a random film, it would still have been annoying. Yeah. But because it was also Star Wars, and this was Darth Vader Jr., it's heartbreaking and really, really upsetting.
Oh, God. Sand. I don't like sand. Fucking hell. I mean, talk about trying to get a woman on side. You know, you might as well start singing Freak Me by Another Level. But it's just...
That's a Gemma.
That's a deep, deep cut there, Gemma.
That's...
It's a classic, and he ruined it, and it just leaves me colder than Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining. It's just the worst example I can possibly think of two people falling in love. No, don't do it. Jesus Christ, fire your agents, please.
Episode one was the most painful experience to watch, but then when you go and watch the second one, I think it makes Phantom Menace actually come across a little bit better, because you don't have to sit through this romance, or forced romance. The worst part is I read that they were actually dating at the time of this filming. It might only be a rumour, but if it is, my God, that must have been an exciting bedroom. My Lord, it is atrocious.
I hear they're not together anymore.
One of the lines I've got down here, because I just had to bring it with me, is this is the actual script, okay?
Okay.
You are so beautiful. It's only because I'm so in love. No, it's because I'm so in love with you. So you what? Love has blinded you? That is...
Hold on. Is this a quote from Attack of the Clones, or is it The Room? Because that sounds like pure wise.
It should be so. The very last line is, is it because I love you? Love is blind. It's George Lucas's fault as well.
Yes,
massively.
Absolutely.
Yeah, massively.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, the book stops with him at this time. And one of the things that really annoys me, if you go back and look at the trivia for this film, some of the people's names, people who auditioned for the role of Anakin, includes Christian Bale, Heath Ledger, and Leonardo DiCaprio. And out of all those people, they chose Hayden Christensen. And this is the reason why. This is the reason that's quoted. Christian got the role because he and Portman, and I quote, looked good together. That is not the reason why you cast someone in a film. That's how you end up with this wooden piece of shit. Cast the best person for the job.
Jesus Christ.
Do you know what the worst part is? When we actually did this as the topic on social media, I picked a picture of these two. And I was searching for a good picture. Mm. It took me about an hour. Because every picture of them together for the press looked like they were both bored and had never met each other. So the fact that he went on the fact that they looked good together...
Yeah.
I don't know what he's seen that we haven't.
No.
I think he's got pictures of George Lucas with an animal or something. And he said, I will publish these online unless you give me the part. Because there's no way you pick him over Christian Bale or Leonardo DiCaprio.
No.
Who was the other one?
Heath Ledger.
Oh my God.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely no.
And it's all Oscar winners, including Portman.
Yes.
Where's Hayden Christensen now?
He was in a recent straight-to-DVD film called, what was it called?
First Kill.
Me and Mark went to Benny's house this weekend and we were intentionally watching bad films, but we only got through 20 minutes of it, didn't we?
Yeah.
Starring him and Bruce Willis cashing yet another paycheck.
Oh, dear. That's
to give you an idea how we got on, we also watched, this is the truth, Red State by Kevin Smith and The Room, and we sat through both of those, but not First Kill.
Yeah.
Lord of mercy.
If we all hadn't have picked this, I wouldn't have thought that I actually knew at all. This is the ultimate. So, Ben, I think it's back to you now because we've both already had two of ours done.
Here's another one that I'm expecting you guys to have, or one of you. Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez in Geely.
I've got it.
Yeah.
I'm done. Hey! I'm all out. I'm spent.
It is absolutely astounding how little chemistry they had, as they were a real-life couple. And not like the rumours you just mentioned that Portman and Christensen might have been seeing each other. These were engaged. These were a legitimate couple who were together for years. But they seemed like they'd never met each other before. They seemed in this film like they were being held hostage.
Was she blinking in a weird way?
At no point did they seem like they'd chosen to be there, which I can understand having seen the film. And they broke up soon afterwards, which I think is no surprise, because this exposed their relationship for what it was, a publicity stunt, because there was clearly no love there, because there certainly wasn't any chemistry. Interestingly, the film was originally written as a straight mob drama, but in rewrites, they made it more of a romantic comedy to capitalise on their real-life relationship. There's one of your all-time great backfires. And unsurprisingly, they then went on to win the worst on-screen couple at the 2004 Razzies.
Never has a award been so well-deserved. Mm-hmm. Absolutely spot on.
Justice has been served.
Again, we put ourselves through this as a rewatch. Was it my fault for that? I can't remember.
I can't remember now, yeah.
But were you here then?
No, and I've never watched
You've actually
it.
Had quite an easy ride.
It's
really.
Good,
we need to punish
it?
You soon.
We've done some really good ones.
My God, this is a stinker of all bad films. I remember being physically sick watching it. And the fact is...
Just imagine erection like a cat.
And to know it got the Razzies is great. You know, it deserved it. But the fact is that I think they watched it back. And they might have been going out for publicity, but if they weren't, it's the biggest counselling session of all time. Watch your life and the way that you are with your missus back. My God, if it looks anything like, how do you pronounce the film? Jiggly.
Geely.
Geely. Well, oh, we've all got something
Giggly.
Here.
Well, you're both wrong. It's Geely.
Geely. Watch Geely back and just kill yourself, because there's no way that you should be round anyone, not even an enemy, and be that awkward round them. It's disgusting.
So is it worth watch?
Something.
Have you never seen it?
No, stay away. Something that makes me laugh is apparently, as you well know, Mark, Kevin Smith is good friends with Ben Affleck. And apparently when those two get together, they rib each other about all sorts of things. And when they get into one of their little ribbing sessions, all Smith has to say is, Geely. And the conversation ends, because Affleck, there is no bigger comeback. He can't even say yoga hoses, because that's not as bad as Geely. It's close.
But by no skin.
Jersey Girl, he actually cast him as the lead role, and he actually had good chemistry there for the first 5 minutes with Jennifer Lopez, and then they killed her off because they probably knew it couldn't be more than 5 minutes long, where Geely got it completely wrong. Oh, wow, God. I'm spent. I'm done.
Well done.
There we go. I feel I can just sit
grab
back
yourself a cigar
and listen to you.
Yeah. Well, it's on to my last choice. So I've gone for two actors that are very well known around the world. It's Christina Ricci and Johnny Depp in Sleepy Hollow.
Do you know, I've never seen this film.
I don't mind it, but the one thing that absolutely kills this film is the partnership between both of them. So they're supposed to have this kind of connection. And you know what? If I'm absolutely honest, I don't even know if they're meant to be a couple in the film or not.
Mm.
There is zero chemistry. There is nothing that suggests that they have a want and a need and a desire, even a friendly friendship. There is nothing to suggest that there is any of that in the film. It feels like when they do a table read, so they're going through the script, just, you know, picking out what works, what doesn't work. It feels like that, but they've just gone, oh, by the way, we've got the costumes here, we've got the film, the guys are all here, aren't you, lads? Yeah, yeah, all right then, we're ready to shoot. And they've just gone, ugh! And they've just acted out in front of them. It's just, Ricci has this kind of wide-eyed cadaver look about her, which makes her really mysterious, and it's the quirkiness that I really love about her, especially in Adam's Family. And Johnny Depp, he's kind of this eccentric kind of dandy that hit and miss these days, but back in the day he was cracking. You would have thought, these two together, solid gold. Nope, solid turd. Just does not work. It just seems very self-indulgent, their whole relationship between them, like, even off screen probably, but they just couldn't even be bothered to make it work. And it's actually a detriment to the film, because without them the film would be great.
Yeah.
And they're the leads.
They are the lead. Yeah. So they kind of need to be there, don't they?
Yeah. But, you know, I wish I could contribute more, but I've not seen this film, so I can't say one thing or the other.
The film's good, I think. It's Tim Burton, isn't it?
Yeah,
and it's before
Tim Burton did a Johnny Depp film.
I know.
You're shitting me.
But his missus wasn't in this one, I don't think.
One of them was Lisa Marie.
Oh, okay. But not the one that he's now with, or he was, that you put her in everything.
Yeah, Helena Bonham Carter. Yeah. He's not with her anymore.
So it's quite weird. But yeah, it's a good film. It's quite gothic. It's got a very good
a headless
look.
Headless Horseman as well. That's always good. Mm. Bit gore.
But Johnny Depp, at that point, was at his peak as well. He was doing really good films.
Yeah.
And then from then...
Yeah. Turd City.
This is turd cast today. We've said turd about 8 times now.
No more turds, no more swearing.
We'll flush the toilet.
Yes, that's gone, along with the thing. The one thing that I've noticed so far with this topic is it's quite depressing that all the people we've mentioned on their day can be fantastic. It's not like we've just picked really bad actors from sort of Sharknado, apart from J-Lo. But, you know,
and
these
Hayden
people...
And Hayden Christensen, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Don't give him credit.
But the others are good people. You would never think that someone had the power to make some of these actors look so atrocious. Mm. It must take some certain skill. Natalie Portman to look bad on camera.
Yeah.
That deserves an award.
So my final one is Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl in Knocked Up.
My God, Knocked Off.
She is just such a fundamentally unlikable character that it's impossible to see why anyone would be interested in her. And similarly, he's such a lazy douche that it's hard to see why an attractive, career-minded woman would be interested in him. It just doesn't work from the get-go. But the most of the problem lies with her. She actively seems like she hated him. Every minute of the film, even when they're supposedly in love and courting and all that kind of shit, she looks like she despises him. Which I think is pretty much true based on her interviews afterwards, where she said she didn't like the film, she thought it was sexist. Why were you in it then? There's my question.
Bunts.
Exactly. Cha-ching. Don't take the money, do a poor job and then whinge.
Yeah.
And that's why people don't really cast her in things these days, because of that kind of attitude. But at no point did I believe that she had any interest in him at all, and nor could I see why he'd be interested in her.
Yeah.
And because of that, they just had no chemistry whatsoever. And I'll tell you, the proof of this, of how upsetting this is to me, is that initially Anne Hathaway was cast in this role.
No.
And I cannot abide Anne Hathaway, but I would rather have had her than Heigl, because at least Hathaway can act.
Yeah.
My dislike for her is not about her acting ability as much as it is her real personality. But she can act, and she can come off, you know, as having chemistry with people. But Heigl, absolutely atrocious. And it nearly scuppers that film, because I really like Knocked Up. It's a damn good comedy. But their distinct lack of chemistry nearly ruined it from the get-go.
And where is she now? She's doing what? Average B-movies, bit parts here and there. And rightfully so. That scene when they have that argument just after they've gone to the doctors, and she is spitting.
Yeah.
Like, she's really venomous. And well, you said, that is not a performance. That is, she really cannot stand the guy.
Yeah.
I've never seen her smile. Like, I'm just thinking about all her films. She's always just a bit peed off. And, like, I can imagine her being really hard work to be around. She's that friend that would just be like, oh, do we have to bring her out? Because she'll just moan all night. She just looks like a whinger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, I think, like, her circuit board's probably broken with the on switch to smile.
Oh, God, it's annoying, man. It is. And Seth Rogen, I'd love to be on set with him. And Paul Rudd.
Yes.
That must be the most fun ever. You'd have a complete blast.
Oh, yeah.
And Jason Segel, all these, like, great dudes just hanging around having a laugh. Jay Baruchel. Leslie Mann is great fun as well. Yeah. All these people. And then she's there with a face like a slapped ass.
Oh, what's the other girl in it that's actually married to the director?
I just said it, Leslie.
Is that her name? Yeah. Okay, I don't know. I don't know them in real life.
Leslie Mann, oh, he's great, he is. Yeah.
But she is one of the coolest girls in the whole world. I want to get drunk with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she is awesome.
And I don't want to get drunk with Heigl or whatever her name is.
Heigl, Beigl.
There we go.
Brilliant. Got to end it there. That's perfect. That's
done. I think we're done.
Bye-bye. Tune in next week for the next episode.
So why don't we hear from social media? They've got some corkers. So on to Twitter. So we got Jess at Jezebelly. She said, Jennifer Lawrence and Josh Hutcherson for The Hunger Games. She said, more energy and fizz in a lush fucking bath bomb.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like those Hunger Games films. I probably shouldn't, but their chemistry ain't great, is it?
Nah.
And she's a good actress again.
Yeah, he's a good actor though
as well.
He's great in The Disaster Artist.
Shame.
Just getting to be bullied by Zac Efron. Her second choice was Malin Ackerman and Billy Crudup for Watchmen.
Yes.
Yeah, that does actually suck.
Yep, she said, wrong actress pick. She is as bland and dry as Weetabix on a good day.
You could have also had Malin Ackerman and Patrick Wilson for the same film.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so... Hallelujah. Hallelujah. And then finally...
You're stretching now, come on.
No more of that.
And then finally...
That's it. Until at least the competition.
And finally, Zoe Deschanel and Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 500 Days of Summer. Never seen such a boring depiction of, unquote, love in my life.
See, I like that film, and I think they're all right. I don't see it. A lot of people said that, and I thought they were all right.
I quite like it too.
Yeah.
I don't care about him. I've no opinion on that one.
Gidget Von LaRue at Gidget Von LaRue said, Sharon Stone and William Baldwin in Sliver.
God, I haven't seen that film in years.
God, yeah. No.
I just remember the UB40 song on it. Walter Matthau and Barbara Streisand in Hello Dolly. Ooh, retro pick.
God, I don't think I've seen that, ever.
Okay. Remove all the sharp objects from Ben. Sean Young and Harrison Ford in Blade Runner.
What?
Oh.
Have a word. Who said this?
Gidget Von LaRue.
All right, you're banned.
Blocked from all social media from now.
You're bad. Fiona Cullen at Fiona_Cullen said Andy McDowell and Hugh Grant for Four Weddings and a Funeral. Amelia Clarke in Me Before You, but there's no one in specific, so I'm just imagining she's just got terrible chemistry with everybody.
Yep.
And then Channing Tatum in Dear John. Again, see Amelia Clarke.
Yep.
Yeah. Quinn Jupiter at Quinn Jupiter said Edward and Bella and Jacob and Bella in Twilight.
That's the best one yet from social media.
It is.
And again, weren't Robert Pattinson and an old slackjaw, weren't they a real life couple as well and had no chemistry?
Yep.
So I still find it funny you call her old slackjaw. Second choice is Anakin and Padme, of course.
Yeah.
And Daredevil and Elektra, so Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck in Daredevil. Another couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't ever go out with Ben Affleck. Yeah. That's the secret.
He's the common denominator here, isn't he?
And Katie from at Out of Time said Michael and Star from The Lost Boys. Yeah, she was...
They're not that great, to be fair.
Well, she wasn't really a great actress. Bruce and Rachel in Batman Begins.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah.
And Thor and Jane and Thor.
Oh, no, I don't agree with that. No,
right. I don't think so.
We respect the opinion of all our listeners, but not that time.
Then onto Facebook, we got Daniel Christie said Daniel Radcliffe and Bonnie Wright in Harry Potter. Mm. Yes, yeah, there's nothing going on there, seriously.
Awful.
Nothing. Sandra Bullock and Jason Patrick for Speed 2, and Christian Bale and Katie Holmes again in Batman Begins.
So true.
Yeah.
Joe Myers said Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl for Knocked Up.
Yep.
Dane DeHaan and Cara Delevingne for Valerian and the blah, 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 blah.
Hell
oh,
yes.
Oh, yes.
How did we forget that one, boys? And of course, Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman for Attack of the Clones. And then Lorna DeMarco said Jessica Alba and Ewan Gruffydd for Fantastic Four. Snooze City.
Everyone in that whole film was just terrible.
Mm-hmm. Nothing was going on. Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence in Passengers.
Oh, yeah, my God.
Terrible.
Rapey. And Robert Pattinson and Christian Stewart for Twilight.
There's some awful, awful.
Hey, I've got more for you. And they're from the very lovely world of Instagram. We got Ben Davis at Suavis91 said Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie for Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Again.
And that's the one that got them together.
Real life couple, yeah.
Yep. Of course, Padme and Anakin.
Yep.
Duh. And then a little different one, but this is kind of a reference to the other weekend. Jason Jordan and Seth Rollins.
I'll give you that.
Agree?
Massively.
Yeah, so keep them coming, guys.
Yeah, I love it. Whose turn is it for the next topic?
It is I. So we spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about big name stars and people with long illustrious careers, award winners, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's what the whole purpose of Movie Masturbate is. So I want to go the opposite end of that spectrum, really. I want us to talk about our up and comers. So I want you to come here next time around with your top three next big things. Who are the people that you think are about to break through into that upper echelon of the Hollywood A-list? It can be kids who've only done a couple of films. It can be people who are predominantly known as TV actors and might just be bursting through into film. But I want to know who you think are the top three next big things.
Maybe you're just not as good as you think. Maybe you should pick another sport.
Suck my dick. She's just a devil woman with evil on her mind. Beware the devil woman, she's gonna get you. She's just a devil woman with evil on her mind. Beware the devil woman, she's gonna get you. She's just a devil woman with evil on her mind.
We've been to an advanced screening of I, Tonya, which stars Margot Robbie as the titular Tonya Harding, the champion figure skater who became infamous for her involvement in a violent attack on her rival Nancy Kerrigan. The film focuses on the fallout from that incident, as well as Tonya's rise to the top of the sport, whilst dealing with the daily abuses of her volatile husband, played by Sebastian Stan, and her terrifying mother, played by Alison Janney. It's a true story, so there's not really much that we can spoil for you, but as usual, there will be spoilers ahead. The film isn't actually released in the UK for a couple of weeks. We've been to an advanced screening, as I say. So if you don't want to know what happens, skip to the end of this particular segment and then come back once you've seen it. Gemma, I want to throw this to you first of all. What are your instant thoughts on I, Tonya?
When I watched the Red Band trailer, I thought it was anarchic, I thought it was unapologetic and badass. I then watched the film and I think it is anarchic, unapologetic and badass. Margot Robbie, holy hell, she is going to be big. She's great. She is Tonya Harding. She's absolutely charismatic. She's enigmatic. You just have your whole entire attention on the screen to her. An absolute fun film. Loved the breaking of the fourth wall. Disappointed when it finished because I wanted to watch more. But really fun film, and I think a lot of people are going to agree with me when they see it.
Mark, I think Gemma's just used all the words.
I know.
Have you got any more that you can think of?
It's elevated her to a level where people can now take her seriously as an actress, because Margot Robbie, until now, she's done some good roles, but everyone just sees her as part of the Suicide Squad, and I just think this is the first time we've actually seen there's more to her than that. She is unbelievable in this film, absolutely incredible. And if you had told us when we were going to record this episode that we're going to watch a biopic about Tonya Harding and ice skating, I'd have gone, meh, I'm not that bothered.
Yeah.
And as it stands right now, we're only three episodes in, it's topped three billboards for me at this stage of the year.
Wowzers.
As my favourite film of the year. I absolutely loved it and I just can't wait to talk about it and hope you're on the same page as us.
I absolutely am, yeah. I don't think it's better than three billboards. I think that's a big statement, but I enjoyed it hell of a lot. It is undoubtedly the best performance of Margot Robbie's young career. She's funny, she's fierce, but she's also incredibly vulnerable. And it's kind of a shame that three billboards came out this year, because I think she would have been the front runner for the Oscar. But it ain't going to happen. It's Frances McDormand's year, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a real shame. But I think if Robbie can do this performance now, and she's, you know, a fairly young woman, she's going to have ample opportunity to win Oscars in her future.
Where do we start with this one? I can't wait.
Let's stick with Margot Robbie for a minute. She's brilliant all the way through the film, but I want to bring it to one scene towards the back end of the film. I was enjoying her work anyway, but this is the bit that nearly broke me. She's gone through all this adversity, and then she's getting geared up to go out and, I think, perform in the Winter Olympics. And she's in the dressing room, and she's looking in the mirror, and the camera is effectively placed behind the mirror, so it's looking straight at her. And she's trying to put on this best plastic smile as she's applying her makeup, but then she starts to break down and she's crying. So there are tears coming down her face and she's applying this plastic smile, and just every possible emotion that you can think of is going through her face in that period. And we're looking at her straight on. All we can do is look at her head, and it's absolutely devastating. A brilliant piece of work from Robbie.
I mean, what goes on through her head when she was going through that scene? And it's funny, it's the whole thing about turning on the smile just to appease people and make sure that, you know, this is me, this is Tanya the skater. Mm. But it is just, it's painful. It really does cut deep in there, because you think she's just affected, she's about to lose her career. Her husband has been so horrific and terrible to her. She's never really understood what love is, even from her own mother. And the only validation she can really get is from when people cheer for her when she does triple axels. It's so, so devastating. Sorry to echo your word there, but it friggin' is, though. It completely cut me to the core.
I just wanted to hug her throughout the whole film. You see her beaten up, and the whole breaking the fourth wall is so effective that she'll turn around and look at you and say, "This is my boyfriend," and then get punched. And you're like, It reminded me of The Fighter. It was very raw. It was filmed a bit like a mockumentary at times. It was hard to watch, really gritty. But when she was getting punched about, you saw the blood and the bruising, and you just wanted to just... All she wants all her life, with her mum, with her boyfriend, with everyone, is to be loved. She's that little girl that never had a hug off her mum or any love or any affection. And she's grown up without any true feelings what it's like. And the bit that broke me, Ben, was when she's actually in the courtroom. So right at the end, where it's told that she can never perform again.
Yeah.
Her whole dream and everything that she's ever worked for is taken from her in a heartbeat like that. And you just see, and this is again when she can show, she doesn't really even say anything. You can see it click inside her mind of how long it actually takes. It's probably 3 or 4 seconds, and you just watch her kind of accept what he's just said, and the emotion that she shows in her eyes is up there with Leonardo DiCaprio and the big heavyweights in his acting world. And it's heartbreaking, because all you want to do is say no, let her do the one thing she loves, because that's all she's got, and now that's gone as well.
I'll give Margot Robbie credit, because never at any point during the film does she make Tonya Harding a caricature. This isn't a parody. This is a semi-biographical story about what happened during that time. And of course, the name Tonya Harding does bring a smirk. It brings this taint of someone who was so gutsy to get a gold medal that allegedly she was willing to take out her fiercest rival in the competition. And I do respect Robbie for that a lot. It was just the story. She played the character to what she believed that character was. And I just think it's very admirable. It could have gone completely a different direction.
And it's very interesting because, you know, you've said it, allegedly she took out her rival, Nancy Kerrigan. I think she was in on it. I think she knew about it in real life. All signs point to the fact that she knew it. So that makes this film a very difficult one to put out into the world, because it's effectively making a dark comedy out of a very violent individual, someone who was so obsessed with victory that they got their boyfriend and one of his idiot mates to clobber their rival's legs in. And we've made a light comedy of this. Don't you think it's a bit odd that we're effectively glorifying that behaviour?
Yeah,
I do, especially towards with the end credits when we actually see Tonya Harding perform that triple axel performance.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's because of the characters are so kind of, let's be honest, they're just scumbags, which has got no brain between their ears at all. And they're just dumbasses. Is that fair to say?
Hello, Sean.
So exactly.
Someone who thought he was...
They're just absolute morons. So you are laughing at them just because they're so stupid. Yeah. And it is comical.
Yeah, and we're glorifying this, what was an absolutely heinous act.
Yeah.
I remember it when it happened when I was a young kid. I remember watching the Winter Olympics, or the lead up to the Winter Olympics, sorry, and seeing Nancy Kerrigan just have face contort in this, like, I can't even imagine what the pain must be. And now seeing it to what it is now, an Oscar contender.
Yeah. Another thing that I thought is a very difficult line that they're walking is, a lot of the film is based on the fact that Tonya grew up effectively as trailer trash. And I don't think the film knows what it wants to do with that. I think it's trying to have its cake and eat it too. So sometimes it kind of mocks her for it. It makes her a bit of a figure of fun because she's this trailer trash. Other times it tries to show that this is why she's like the way she is, because she had this difficult upbringing. She had this demanding mother. I don't know what it's trying to say to us about her upbringing. Is it something we're just supposed to laugh at, or is it something we're supposed to then understand her a bit more for? I don't know what they're going for there.
And that's why I said about making the character not too much of a parody. I think, I've got to say, I probably think it's the latter. You know, this is why the events leading up to what happened, this is why basically, you know, she never stood a chance.
The thing is, Ben, that's why it reminds me of The Fighter, because The Fighter has the same sort of family that are, you know, a trailer trash.
Yeah.
And you've got that character played by Christian Bale that's very comical and jumping, throwing himself out the window. And I was laughing. And that's what I get from this. The tone isn't quite set enough. And when it is, it then jumps. It's exactly like The Fighter for me. I just couldn't kind of grasp, what are you trying to do here?
Yeah, I tell you, the film that it reminded me of the most was Goodfellas, actually.
Yes.
The way it was edited, and with the fourth wall breaking, I got a very Goodfellas vibe from it.
And Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
That director bloody loves Scorsese. Mm-hmm.
Craig Gillespie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it definitely had a Coen Brothers feel to it for me. The way it felt and the way it looked and the way it was shot at times. I thought it was, you could see he was kind of paying homage definitely to Scorsese throughout.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the other characters. So we've mentioned the mother. So Tonya's mother, Lavona, played by Alison Janney. Good God almighty, what a performance.
Yeah, she is a heathen. She is just a nasty piece of work. But that's to Janney's credit.
Mm-hmm.
She isn't in the film for that long, but when she is, you damn, by God, you know she's there. The presence is unreal. She just commands the whole screen and the presence, even to the awkward first date of Tonya and her future husband. It's just so cringy because you wouldn't mess with her. No one would. But she's just so domineering in the whole film.
In that scene, I think at the time Tonya's meant to be about 16, isn't
she? Yeah, with the braces, yeah.
Yeah, and then she's out on this date chaperoning them, and then she just turns to her and Jeff and says something like, "Are you fucking each other yet?"
Yeah.
Cheers, Mum.
Are you a gardener or a grower?
Not now, Mum. Cheers. I think they should give her the Oscar now. I can't see anyone beating that as a best supporting actress. I can't. I just thought it was absolutely awesome.
Ooh.
It's going to be her or Laurie Metcalf for Lady Bird.
A lot of good comments about, from what I've heard, it's been good from there, but we don't know
yet. It's Janny's to lose because she's won the Golden Globe and so on.
Yeah, and fun fact, Janny used to be an ice skater when she was a little girl.
Wow.
But she got some kind of injury. It stopped her from going forward with it and so decided to start acting.
See, that's one thing we should really give a lot of praise. The actual choreography and the scenes where she obviously wasn't ice skating was done very well with the whole face over the top.
Yeah, see, I thought it was atrocious.
Did you really?
I thought the CGI where they've plastered Margot Robbie's face on a real skater looked horrendous. It was that uncanny valley thing where something in your mind is just saying, this ain't quite right.
Oh, I thought it was gone as well as it could.
I thought it was really good.
I thought it was appalling. Like,
really?
It looked terrifying. It looked ghoulish.
Are you thinking Scorpion King bad? I thought it was done very well. Perhaps I don't know. Perhaps I was just enjoying it, not looking too hard.
I'm too in tune to that kind of shit. It has to be spot on, or else I will notice it. And that I couldn't come away from it. But let's go back to Alison Janney for a minute. One of the scenes that I thought was absolutely devastating is she and Tonya have this awful relationship, and then right at the end of the film, after Tonya's been through all this shit and she's got the press camped outside of her little apartment, the mother turns up and you think, oh, finally, there's going to be a warm moment between them. And it looks like she genuinely cares and just wants to see that she's all right. And then it turns out she's got a little dictaphone in her pocket and she's recording the conversation to try and get a confession on tape that presumably she can then go and sell to the highest bidder.
And it's
heartbreaking, isn't it?
I was gutted because I didn't know anything about this before I went in. I didn't know the whole story. I didn't read up about it. And I thought, yes! The mum comes good. It is a bit of a Hollywood ending.
Mm.
Nope. And then you see her flip. So then at that point, Tonya just goes absolutely mental, rips it off her, smashes it up and gets her by the scruff of her neck and chucks her mum out into the rest of the press, basically saying, you're just one of them.
Yeah.
Get out. Mm. Horrendous. Awful. Hard viewing. Tough.
Oh, yeah.
Bloody tough.
I think...
bloody tough.
Bloody tough.
Please.
My favourite character in the film, though, has to be Sean Eckhart, played by Paul Walter Hauser. Sean is the dim-witted, supposed bodyguard of Tonya.
That's you being generous.
And he's basically just Jeff's dumbass mate who, you know, gets benefits and lives in his mum's basement. And he's so delusional to the point where he refers to himself as being an international counter-terrorism expert.
No, you're not.
You're not, mate. And he's so funny. I've never seen this poor Walter Hauser in anything before, but he was absolutely brilliant. And the sign of how great he was, I think we mentioned just now in the credits, there's some documentary footage of some of the real people.
Yes!
And the real Sean Eckhart is just exactly like Paul Walter Hauser, to the point where he sort of has these heavy-lidded, half-closed eyes and a really sort of smug satisfaction on his face. And Hauser nailed it. Nailed Eckhart. Every cadence, every facial tick, nailed it.
Like, if comic book guy from The Simpsons was a real human being, it would be him.
Worst episode ever.
And that's the one thing that was the problem, because I was laughing at him, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't be laughed at. I know he was a bit comical and stuff, but that's when the tone isn't right again.
Yeah.
Especially when he's like shouting abuse and stuff. I'm just laughing at the way he looks, even. He's just ridiculous.
Yeah, he's so funny. It's an interesting film. You know, I don't want to pick too many faults in it, because I really did enjoy it. And I suppose this isn't a fault, it's just a facet of it. It's hard to know what's truth and what's fiction, because at the start of the film it says that it's based on conversations that the filmmakers had with Tonya Harding and with her ex-husband Jeff Galooly, and they both have fundamentally different truths. Mm-hmm. You know, they represent what happened very differently. So it's hard to know what is true and what's bullshit. I tend to think the worst in people, so even though Galooly denies the fact that he was physically abusive to Tonya, I don't believe him for a second. I believe that she was abused by him. Similarly, when they both kind of claim that Tonya didn't know anything about the attack on Kerrigan, I don't buy it.
Of course she knew.
Don't buy it for one solitary second.
That was... Yeah, I kind of walked away and still not knowing the full story. I mean, the news and the media loves to glorify a villain and they love to glorify the hero out of it. And I did even remember back then and remember now that was the case between Harding and Kerrigan. And yeah, walking away from it, I don't know what the truth was. I would like to think of the best in people. Mm. But again,
go with Ben's, trust me. She knew. Always think the worst. True. There's no way she just went, oh, I don't know. Really? You just completely took her out.
Why would she agree to have a biopic about her, though? That's what I'm...
Bunts.
Yeah,
and
also so much time has passed. I think if they were making this film 2 years after it had happened and she was still defending herself, she wouldn't have done it. But now, so many people are of the belief that she knew what was going on, that it's not going to harm her by putting this film out there.
And I wonder what Kerrigan thinks of all of this. I don't think she'll be at the box office.
No, well, they asked her. She was interviewed and said, will you go and see this? And she was like, no, I lived it. I don't really need to see it.
Shit.
Fair play to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stick to your guns. Guns. Stick to your guns.
Stick to your guns.
Stick to your guns.
Oh, Bayek. John Coffey's back.
Oh, God. Yorkshire cast. I really did enjoy the soundtrack as well. Loads of cool classic old school tunes. Oh. Why does Cliff Richard work so well? I would never buy one of his records ever. Hate the guy. But I just...
Hate's a strong word. What's he ever done to you?
He just turns up at Wimbledon, looks all nice, but I just don't trust him.
Oh, because he's a bloody lovely fella.
He might be, but I just think the worst, like Ben said. He's too lovely. You can have too lovely, and too lovely normally leads
lovely.
To...
And he's... He's about 100 and he looks about 60.
Yeah.
Definitely drinks virgin blood.
Exactly. And I'll tell you what now, mums and grandmas bloody love him. You ever talk to a grandma, they'll have a bottle of wine of his, they'll have one of his records. Yeah, he's got his own wine company.
He
does really well. Yep. He is... Don't trust him.
Oh, but stick up for Cliff.
But I'll tell you what, his song was perfect in the film, and a lot of the songs I normally wouldn't own, and this is what I like, were done so well as the soundtrack, I found myself wanting to then listen to it once I got home.
Yeah.
Apart from Cliff, because I don't trust him.
How dare you? How dare you? Barracuda by Heart as well. That is a rocking song.
Really,
and then,
cool.
Of course, you got Fleetwood Mac, The Chain. You got a bit of ZZ Top in there.
It's great.
It's a great old soundtrack. Really,
nice.
Really good.
Mm. Okay, then, guys, shall we score it?
Yeah.
Gemma, I started with you, so I'm going to go back to you.
Okay. A really good film. I think it's worthy to be in the Best Picture nominations for this year's Oscars. I'm going to give it a very good 8 out of 10.
It's not better than Three Billboards, is it? What am I talking about?
I don't know.
But it's still bloody good. You know when you come out of a... Because we haven't just seen this at the exclusive screening. You come out and go, oh my God, Matrix Reloaded effect. It's not...
Said no one ever.
It's not better than Three Billboards, but it's a damn good film.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a high 8 as well. That's good.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I think it's totally inconsistent. I think it wants to have its cake and eat it too at times. But the performances are so strong and it's stylish and thoroughly enjoyable. So it's an 8 out of 10 for me as well. So that gives I, Tonya, a skip to the end, 8 out of 10.
It's competition time! On the last episode, episode 88, we had loads of competitions, and to kick things off, we have the Last Exit RoboCop t-shirt. We put the question out there because this is what... It was one of the Last Exit... what was the reason they picked RoboCop? It must have been there...
It was part of the iconic movie deaths.
There we go. This is what I like, synergy and all that. So, who played RoboCop?
I don't know.
Ben?
Paul, I was about to say Paul Weller. It's
close.
It's not Paul Weller.
Close, it's his brother Peter.
Peter.
Peter Weller. So Martin Coleman on Twitter will be getting that awesome t-shirt. Also, we had an Alien Wayland t-shirt, and that was one of their most iconic deaths. Yeah. Who directed the original Alien?
Ridley Scott.
Well done. And Claire Roberts on Facebook will be getting that. Oh, it's all t-shirts. We had Dark Bunny Tees, who gave us the Porg Scratchings t-shirt. And the question was, who tried to direct the film The Last Jedi?
Rian Johnson.
And Oliver Kingston won that on Twitter, so you'll be getting that. And like we've seen a lot this week with some of our winners for Darkest Hour, and we've seen people winning their t-shirts for Big Lebowski,
yeah,
tweet a picture, because I love seeing how happy we make people. A couple more questions. We had Coco Pops, not the cereal, but the actual pops from Funko.
Nice.
All you had to do was say, what rating did we give Coco? Do you know?
Eight
out of ten. We do honestly know what we're doing here. And Sophie Dent on email will be getting that. And the best thing we did as well, we put out there, just give us a solid good 5-star iTunes rating. And all we asked was, one person will be picked out of all the people that have given us an iTunes rating in the past. And Samantha Bish has said, in 1 month, I've listened to every single episode of Skip to the End. How's that for a slice of fried gold?
Fried gold indeed.
Lovely.
Bloody love that.
That's overdosing though, isn't it?
It's too much. I'll be honest, I would hate us by the end of that. Yeah. I would be like, these are dreadful. But we appreciate it, and
we
you've
do.
Now got some pops for it. So thank you very much for that. Now, guys, before we get on to what we're giving the people again for this time, it's time we add some stuff.
Oh, I love being a winner.
You're always a winner, trust me. Did your parents used to tell you that when you were growing up?
No.
Our good friends at Last Exit to Nowhere have given us some t-shirts, and they know us. So, Ben.
Yeah.
Here we have a gorgeous Blade Runner 2049 t-shirt.
Oh, nice. With the Wallace Corporation logo on it. That's very cool.
That's sweet.
I love how they know us.
Yeah.
Gemma,
yes.
We have for you an IT t-shirt,
yay!
Of baseball style.
I love Derry.
And I have a Thing t-shirt with, this is, you would never know this is the Thing unless you're a proper nerd like me.
Yeah.
But it's the old chess wizard.
Oh, that's cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah. Nerd!
Ben, you're not going to be happy about this, but... Shall I not give her the present I was going to give her now? Screw you! So, our good friend Sully has sorted out Gemma with some Funkos.
Oh, thank you, Sully.
Well, thank you, but it's not good enough because, you know, these are for you.
I just insulted you.
As he knows that how much they mean
okay.
to you.
Whoa!
Right, what have you got?
Oh my God, I have got...
I'm not happy about this, Ben.
I've got Jack Torrance, Blood et al.
That's good.
Very cool.
Okay. I've got Mrs. Elbow herself. I've got Wendy Torrance.
Yeah,
I've been that.
Oh.
I just don't like her.
Then.
You're never going to sleep.
Got little Danny Torrance.
Oh, that
his little
amazing.
Red rum.
Amazing.
Oh, thank you very... Oh my God, it says red rum on the... Thing.
It's cool,
yeah.
isn't it?
Thank you, Sully. Thank you.
That's what they do. So
yeah.
I think, Ben, we should get some sort of gifts. So,
yeah.
you know, CM Punk would be nice as a funker. Any Kevin Smith, you know. But yeah, well, I hope you enjoy them, Gemma.
I will do.
And on that note, this is your last episode. So take your goodies and bugger off.
So harsh. Nerd.
Unbelievable. Thank you very much. And talking about Funkos, they've given us some more for this episode. So as you know, in a very, very little while's time... That's not the word. That's not short. In a very little while's time. Coming up shortly, we'll be masturbating over Harrison Ford. And to celebrate, our good friends Funko have given us some Han Solo Pops, a Han Solo plush, and some Star Wars mini mysteries, which are just basically very hard to get hold of, but they're very cool. So you might also hopefully pull a Han Solo out of them. But these are very cool. So let's say, what character does Harrison Ford play in Star Wars?
Oh, I wonder. That's really I wonder hard. What it could be.
We've also had some new people come on board. So, you know, there's a film coming out called Den of Thieves. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
It's like Ice Cube's son in it.
It
and
does.
Stuff.
It
yeah.
does. And it has a wrapper, which might be the question coming up. But they're giving us a hoodie, a gym bag, a neck scarf, an SFX attachable phone camera lens. They're giving us bloody loads. The film stars 50 Cent. What's his full name? That's fair. Bit
mm-hmm.
of work
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
Last exit to nowhere. They've just given us some goodies, and they've given us some goodies. So, to celebrate again, coming up with the masturbate, we've got an Indiana Jones tee. Look at that, with the Marshall College.
That's
lovely.
Good.
Lovely.
What weapon does Indiana Jones use that rhymes with pip and begins with the letter W? How's that? I don't want to make it too easy
no,
for those people
no.
out there.
It's cryptic, that one, isn't it?
Or whiptic. But,
oh my God!
Awful. Also coming up, we have a rewatch of Pulp Fiction. So they've given us a look at this Jack Rabbit Slim's t-shirt.
Nice.
I love that we got all this, you know, we work hard to make sure it goes in conjunction with our episodes. What rating do we give the rewatch coming up? So you've got to stick around. And finally, we want to reward those people that give us iTunes rating. They're coming through thick and solid. You've seen them every day.
Like a toilet clog.
It is Turdcast.
It is. Really, really thick and solid. And you've seen us.
The phrase is thick and fast. I don't know why you've got thick and solid.
I don't know. But yeah, it's about time we've got some barkisms for people to rip me. I can see it now. It's, oh, fuck this. If you leave us an iTunes rating, what we're going to do is we're going to give you all the Han Solo... Han Solo. Fucking hell. That's what I used to do at uni. Han Solo Pops. You're going to get the Han Solo plush. You'll get a Shining bundle that Gemma's just got.
Ew.
You'll get a Tron bundle. And you'll get the Star Wars Mystery Minis. All for an iTunes rating. That's
amazing.
I'm going to get another iPhone and just enter myself. Come back in 2 weeks' time and we'll announce the winner of all this awesome, awesome, solid, thick goods.
Wing out the gimp. I think the gimp's sleeping. Well, I guess you just have to go wake him up now, won't you?
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot of an actor or an actress and we discuss our favourite performance from that particular person. So on the last episode, we chose Mr. Good Boy himself, Harrison Ford.
What makes him a good boy?
Because
he's never been known as that.
Mr. Good Boy.
Who's Mr. Bad Boy? That's what I want to know.
That's for a future episode.
Kevin Spacey.
Okay, so Harrison Ford. So I want to hear your guys' favourite Ford performance. So I'm going to throw this to Ben first. Give me your best one.
I wonder.
To the surprise of absolutely no one, it's Rick Deckard in Blade Runner.
There we are.
It's an amazing performance in the greatest film of all time. He has this world-weary, melancholy vibe about him. He's a guy who's seen it all, but he struggles with the rights and wrongs of his job. Is he simply out there retiring robots? Or is he murdering sentient beings who have lives, memories, desires? And that's everything that's going across him, going through his emotions as he's playing this role. And it's absolutely fantastic. And something you have to remember about this performance is it was out of his comfort zone at the time. He came straight off the back of popcorn action flicks like Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then into this, which is nothing like that. He's not the smirking action hero that he was in those films. And he's wonderful as a smirking action hero, don't get me wrong. But then to play this kind of melancholy vibe was a different note for him to play, and he did it absolutely perfectly. So it was such a soulful and understated performance and so unexpected. And to bring it to the present day, it was so heartening to see him then play Deckard again in Blade Runner 2049 and give such a strong performance. It was a more grizzled version of Deckard, but it was still recognisably Deckard, unquestionably still Deckard. And it just gives me the warm and fuzzies. Just
look
thinking about it.
Look at him. He's so happy.
A little dance.
He's waked up. Look at him. Look at that. The thing is, when he did Star Wars in Episode 7, he didn't give a shit. You could see that he just did not give a shit on his return. So when he came back for Blade Runner, I was worried, dude. I genuinely thought, Ben's worried anyway about this, but his hero's going to probably shit all over him. But he actually looked like he wasn't there for the paycheck.
Yeah.
He didn't just turn up in his Gap t-shirt and joggers and stuff. And
no.
He looked like he acted his heart out. And he was given an unbelievable performance that was up there as good as Gosling and everyone else.
Yeah, and if you think specifically to the performance where he's alongside Jared Leto as Neander Wallace, and Wallace brings out that clone of Rachel, and the kind of heartbreak where he realizes that part of him thinks I'd want to be with this Rachel, it's the woman I love, but then he realizes no, it's not her, it's just a piss poor facsimile.
Yeah,
amazing,
unbelievable.
That's because he's a good boy.
What is all this about? Mr. Good Boy.
Do you not know his name? He's Harrison, Mr. Good Boy Ford.
If he was in the WWE, here he is, Mr. Good Boy. I don't know where you get this from sometimes. You need to stop drinking.
You wish.
What are you drinking?
What have you got today?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I'm drinking Brothers Hop Cider, born in a field in Somerset.
It is nice. I love the black can. It's kind of like a matte finish. It's beautiful. Mm. But it actually tastes really fresh.
It does.
It is good.
That's
Brothers Cider, available in Aldi and all other supermarkets nationwide.
Nationwide.
Oh, Brothers is so tasty.
It is.
Should we get back on track?
sorry. Hey, I want to hear
your tasty choice for Mr. Ford.
It is Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ooh.
One of the most iconic, greatest heroes in film history. He's been quite lucky, hasn't he? He's done some iconic roles, but mm-hmm. this is the one that tips it for me. Or tops it for me. Tips, tops, whatever it is. Tip tops, remember them? They were good when you were a kid. Little tip top drinks. They were like 5p with a straw. Nope. Okay, we're not going to plug them.
I'm perplexed about this conversation.
In this film, he's warm, he's funny, and I just think Harrison Ford had a blast recording. And recording? He didn't come on the episode. I'm talking shit. Harrison Ford had a blast filming this.
Yeah.
This is behind the brains of George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. You know that those guys had this character planned, probably from when they were kids watching really cool classic series and stuff. He's the coolest guy in town, with that whip, with that hat, with everything. He's the teacher at school that I never had. I never respected anyone as much as I'd respect him as my teacher. And what else did he do? Was it like archaeology or something?
Yeah, he was an archaeology professor.
How boring is that shite? But he does not make it look boring, because when he gets to go home, he gets to be Indiana Jones. And as a kid, that's all I ever wanted. I remember, now this is a bit of an old shout out, me and my mate Pooh Pocket Williams.
I remember him.
Yeah, not many teacher cleaners do as well from our school. But when we were a kid, me and him would go out to the Glebeland Fields in Bayston Hill. Bit of a shout out.
Represent.
And we'd have whips with us.
Bayston Hill Massive. What?
You can listen to them. You can hear them cheering as we speak. And we'd have whips with us, and we'd run around in like little brown shirts.
Hang on.
And we'd make dens in the field. Everyone made dens. Please help. Don't make me out that I'm the only person that ever built a den with twigs and stuff, and you run around.
Did not
like
do that.
Like a badger.
Like a base.
Or a squatter.
So basically we're in the woods and we've got these whips and we're chasing each other around.
This was before 50 Shades as well.
And we had good chemistry. And we were kicking dust everywhere, and we were pretending that this boulder was after us, and it was incredible. And we used to do this all day. When you were a kid, you could just play all day, couldn't you? It'd be the best day ever. What went and happened? One day he trod in loads of dogger. Like dog shit everywhere. It covered up his legs everywhere. He's covered in it, right? This isn't why he's called Pooh Pocket Williams.
I was going to say, that kid's a real shit, man.
I know, it is. And our parents stopped us from going out doing this. And do you know what they said? It makes you blind. Dog poo makes you blind.
Yeah, it does. Dog shit eye blindness disease. It's a fact. Yeah.
I know, but I've never met anyone that's like, oh, sorry, I just knocked into you. Oh, are you blind? Yeah, dog poo. No, no one... Nobody, and if you're listening right now and you went blind from dog poo, let me know, because I've never met anyone that turned blind from dog poo. It's a myth. It's just try and teach you to stop playing in dog poo.
If anything, you get it from shih tzus.
Yes, but it's true, and I don't understand, and that stopped me from having a proper childhood of being able to kick dust and become an iconic person like Indiana Jones, and it's still to this day, I can't let it go. And I'm not blind. So, Mum, you screwed us. Sorry, I just needed to get that off my chest. And he got it all over his chest.
The poo.
And everything. Pooh Pocket Williams is... He is just haunted by poo.
He's a shit magnet.
It's his third cast again.
Oh, man.
What's your choice? Help me.
Yeah, I'm going to quickly steer this into the right direction. And I, of course, have gone for Han Solo.
Nice.
Yes.
Confident, charismatic and charming son of a bitch. He's so self-assured. He knows that he doesn't really need anyone. He's all that matters. His bezzy mate, Chewie, he's all right with him. He don't mind him hanging around. And even when Princess Leia kind of like, you know, has a little thing, she's like, he's all right. And he's like, bitch, I know I'm all right. What do you want? It's just...
I don't think he called her a bitch.
No, I think he just said, I know. You know what I mean? He's not like, bitch.
But he never over-delivered the character. He did this with this cool swagger about him. And there was nobody that could ever play the part of Han Solo other than Harrison Goodboy Ford. But it feels organic. It feels natural. He is Han Solo. Of course, with what happens in The Force Awakens, that has happened, and we cannot do anything about it. But I just loved watching the evolution of the character from A New Hope right through to Empire Strikes Back. Return of the Jedi is the weaker out of the three. But he's freaking cool.
So are you just picking him across the whole Star Wars milieu, or are you picking one particular film?
My favourite of Han Solo is A New Hope, because it was the very first time we met him, and he was just so brazen.
Mm-hmm.
He played by his own rules. He was a rogue. He didn't care what anybody else thought. And of course, when Empire Strikes Back comes in, he's a little bit more evolved, and we start seeing the love story between him and Leia. And of course, in The Force Awakens, he's a shell of a human being as to what we saw in A New Hope. But New Hope Han Solo rocks my world.
You can't really say much more. He's no. the coolest mother... in town. He really is. He's an absolute legend. I didn't want to be him when I was a kid because I wasn't really wanting to be him. I wanted to be Covered in poo. But I think he's one of the coolest guys in town, and now I want to be him.
I love that we've picked all three of his major contributions to pop culture.
It's beautiful.
Between us there.
He is the coolest guy, isn't he?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. But there must be more outside the triangle of podcasting where people have come and said, much more, not much more iconic, but there's more to him. What else has he done?
Oh, there's plenty out there. We've had some great suggestions come through from social media. On Twitter, Anna Pink at Anna247 has said, it's Han Solo, hands down.
Yeah. Nice. Did she write hands down?
She wrote hands with a D. She's missed a trick there. It should have been hands down. Shame. Life's a Pitch podcast at Life's a Pitch Show has said President James Marshall in Air Force One.
Great film.
Oh, get off my plane.
I need to revisit that film. Yeah. So it's been a while.
It's great.
On Instagram, StuMars119 has said it's got to be Dr. Richard Kimball from The Fugitive.
Yes.
That is actually an unbelievable movie.
Yeah, it is very good. Dave Roper on Twitter at DaveRoper77. I love his performance as Henry Turner in Regarding Henry, very much against type. I haven't seen that
I've not seen that.
Is that like a historical kind of...
You're guessing, aren't you?
I don't know.
I want to see that.
I can't remember. I need to look it up. On Instagram, NickyNack96 has said, has to be Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Wayne Moore on Twitter at Wayne Moore said, I like his performance in What Lies Beneath. Harrison is a bad guy for a change.
That is a good film. Quite chilling.
Yeah, and it's true. He very rarely plays bad guys. Matthew Avery on Facebook has said, it's got to be Woodrow Dollarhyde from Cowboys and Aliens.
What? That's utter shite. That's one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Having a giraffe.
There must be a typo in this.
Awful
somewhere.
Film.
I think he must have said something like Rick Deckard.
Yeah.
We all make mistakes. It's fine.
Yeah.
Good Times, Great Movies at GTGMcast. He's surprisingly good / funny in Working Girl. He is.
Yes, he is.
That is a fun film.
Yeah.
Chris Duck on Facebook has said, Ali Fox in The Mosquito Coast. This performance stands out for me because it showed again that he truly has talent and range.
See, I've not seen that, and I saw it come through loads. Yeah. And I feel like, have I missed something here? Is it a big film?
It's not. It wasn't a huge film, but he's good in it and quite dark and disturbed. Yeah.
I need to get it watched.
And then finally, David Thomas on Twitter at DiddyKing1. Up until last year, I'd always say Star Wars, but last year, for the first time, I watched Blade Runner. So Blade Runner wins. It just blew my mind. Still can't believe I didn't watch it sooner. Neither can I, Dave.
Do you know what's scary as well? He watched The Thing for the first time last year as well. How do you go that long in your life? He must be in his 30s and not see those two unbelievable movies.
Yeah, 36 years late.
Well,
but at least he's seen them now and
he loves
them.
Exactly.
And more importantly, he listens to us.
Yeah.
So he's good with us.
Mm-hmm.
Who's masturbating?
I can't remember if I picked one out in a while.
I think it's Ben.
I did it last week.
Come on,
I
Ben,
think...
whip it out.
Give me a drum roll before I whip it out then.
Let's do it.
Hope it's a good boy. And we're going to be masturbating over Robin Williams.
Oh, yes!
Ladies and gentlemen, now the moment you've all been waiting for...
It's now time for the rewatch, and I wanted to pick something low-key, small, that people hadn't really discovered in their life, so I went with Pulp Fiction, one of the biggest films of all time. It makes every top 10 movies of all time list that I've ever read. It seems weird to have to tell you what happens in this film, because I think that every listener to our podcast has probably seen this film, but the film is directed by Quentin Tarantino, and the film tells the story of the lives of two hitmen, a boxer, a gangster's wife, and a pair of diner bandits that intertwine in four tales of violence and redemption. Gemma, if you can't laugh at me for trying to talk, I might shoot you in the head.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's going to be very, very spoiler-filled. I really do believe that everyone out there has seen it. But Ben, Tarantino is your man. Mm-hmm. I picked it because I just want to have a film that we can all enjoy. It's got to be done. It's one of the most iconic films of all time. So I want you to tell me why and how much it really truly means to you, this absolute masterpiece of a film.
Well, the first thing I want to mention is, in the intro there, Gemma, you kind of joked that it was a small indie film.
Kind of.
That's literally what it is.
Yeah.
I think it had an $8 million budget. Uh-huh. It was produced, you know, by Miramax and those guys. It's not a big studio film. So it is literally a small indie film.
$8 million?
Just, yeah.
That's $2 million more than the room.
I know, yeah. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah. But for a small indie film, it just exploded because it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. It was then nominated for several Oscars, winning for Best Adapted Screenplay. It was huge at the box office as well. They put it out wide immediately in over 1,000 screens in the US. And then it's gone on to become one of the biggest films of all time. Massively popular, massively successful, critically acclaimed. With good reason, because it's a fucking phenomenal film. And it's such a leap in scope and scale from Reservoir Dogs. It's far more expansive and ambitious. Which is saying something, because Reservoir Dogs in and of itself was a hella good film. But to go from that to this, it's like night and day, and I adore it.
Oh, how do I top that? It is one of the coolest, most sharply written films in cinema history. I believe that it is an important part of pop culture, not just in the 1990s, but I still think it has a part to play in today's world. And everything links beautifully. I'm talking about the music, the shots, the characters, even right down to the individual look of each character. It's still recognised today. And it excites me that there's a whole generation of future film lovers who have yet to see this film. And when they do see this film, it's going to change their lives, just like I would imagine it has changed all of our lives.
Oh my God. I should start giving myself the first bit to talk and then we lead to Ben. But my God, this film for us, I think, gave us the trademark of Tarantino, his dialogue. It gets you and pulls you in from the first scene. And the film's not short. Was it 2 hours and a half?
Two and a half,
yeah.
This gave us exactly what he is an absolute pioneer in. I don't believe anyone can write dialogue as well as him.
No.
I don't. And it's his trademark. It is. Every film has got scene after scene of easily 10-minute scenes where you should get bored. In Kevin Smith films, you would be bored.
After
this is true.
30 seconds.
Yes. But it's true, isn't it? You were fed up the other day when we were watching Red State and you were like, this is going on too long. And that's Michael Parks, who's a good actor.
Yeah.
But he can get you completely captivated. He can draw your attention into every word they say. He's done it in Glorious Bastards. He's done it in every film he's done. But this is the master craft, not even the, it is the master class of filmmaking, but dialogue. It is. It's perfection.
It's some of the most dense back and forth dialogue I've ever heard in a film. It's perfectly summed up by the opening conversation between Pumpkin and Honey Bunny in the diner, the way they're just sort of rat-a-tat speaking back to one another. And it's interesting because that doesn't work for everyone. I think people who appreciate film and appreciate good scripts will love this. I've got a friend, for example, called Guy, who is an actor, and he doesn't like this film, and he doesn't really like Tarantino in general. He thinks it's too much talking.
And you're friends with this guy.
He just thinks it's too much talking. He's someone who likes plot, and he's not alone in this. Some people like a film to move from A to B to C with no extraneous nonsense. Whereas this, there's a lot of extraneous stuff. There's a lot of conversations, you know, the whole Royale with cheese conversation and so on. But those things to me are integral because they tell you about the character. Yes, it doesn't move the plot any further, but it lets you know who these people are. After that first conversation in the car between Jules and Vincent, we know who these guys are as people. We know that it's interesting to them that they're in France, quarter pounder's called a Royal with cheese. You know, we know that they find it interesting that a Big Mac is Le Big Mac.
Yeah.
It tells us about these people. And then because you know who they are, you care about who they are, and it's more impactful when they do things later on in the plot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas if you never get to know someone and they're just all of a sudden here in a room or there and they're dead or whatever, why would you care? Because you never got to know them.
Yeah.
That's why his dialogue is so important and so impressive, because it draws you in to them as people.
And the thing is, we talked at the very start of this episode about bad chemistry. These two are so natural from the moment they come on screen, and it just flows. The conversation flows perfectly. At one point, aren't they talking about the value of a foot massage?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's just they're just like they were made to be on screen together. And that's what Quentin Tarantino does. I've never seen a scene, even in his shite stuff, like, is it, what's the one with the drive-in with Dad in it?
Death Proof.
Yeah. Even when the girls are talking in that, it's great.
Yeah.
I don't really like the film, but you can't deny that what they're talking about has a purpose. And yeah, man, he knows how to get the best out of people. And just from the off, it's fucking awesome. Let's start swearing. It's fucking fucking incredible.
We're going to be thigh deep in fucks before we know it. But
that's a generalism. Thigh deep.
thigh deep in fucks. Well, my personal favourite character will probably come as no surprise, and it is the character of Mia Wallace, played wonderfully by Uma Thurman. She has such a... It's almost like the Han Solo talk. She is so cool in this. I mean, all right, she's a cokehead, and drugs are not cool, but the way how she moves, the way how she interacts with Vincent, it's almost like this sort of playfulness that she knows that she's married to Marcellus, but and she knows that Vincent, you know, he's got a bit of a thing for her. She plays with it. You know, she don't care. She's happy to kind of go along with it. Mm. And it's evident when they hit the, not just the dance floor, but before, when they're having their burger at Jack Rabbit Slim's, and she's talking about how there's been an accusation of someone being thrown over a building because he saw her get a foot massage from someone. And again, it's the banality of that conversation. If you overheard it in a restaurant where you're going to get a burger, you'd probably, well, you might have to sort of listen in because it's a bit of a weird one to talk about, but it's not of any value. But again, that kind of, it's almost like conversational tennis, you know, you're watching these two people just bat against each other yeah. and engaging in a conversation that you feel like you're the third person at that table. And then, of course, we have the Chuck Berry song that they dance to, the twist competition that they take part in. And it is the coolest 2 minutes. It is just one of the coolest
cool
scenes.
Is the word. It's yeah. so it really is. Cool.
It's as cool as hell.
And it doesn't matter that, you know, when she's twisting, you know, she's properly like squatting down. She's got her ass in the air. She's like proper giving it some. And then you've got Vincent Vega sort of doing the two double fingers across his face. And you want to party with these motherfuckers. You just want to leave the cocaine bit out because that is not cool.
Yeah, and the heroin. Don't trust the heroin.
I want the milkshakes, but that's yeah. that's yeah. what I want.
It tells you how old this film is, the fact that Vincent was put out, the fact that it was a $5 milkshake.
Yeah.
That's cheap as fuck now.
Yeah. Yeah, where's that?
No, it's like $15 now.
Yeah,
but yeah, that the chemistry between those two is off the charts, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah,
they're unbelievable together.
But how quickly does their relationship shift? Oh. As soon as she starts listening to Urge Overkill's "Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon," then takes a bit of that snort. The next thing you know, her nose is like starting to bleed, and she passes out. That whole sequence about getting her to that drug dealer's den to get the adrenaline shot in the heart—it is one of the most from this sort of really, you know, you're really enjoying these two people's company. To oh my god, is she going to be okay? It's just, it's mind-blowing. It is so mind-blowing just how effective this whole section of the film is. It's my favourite section of the film.
And the word that you've just used there, section, that brings me something that I wanted to talk about, is the fractured narrative. So it's not a linear story of this is what happens then chronologically through to the end. We see these different little episodes, as it were, and you cut back and forth between them and it's kind of disorientating at first. You're not entirely sure what links to what or why these things are happening, but it all kind of pulls together at the end. Like right near the start of the film, you see Jules and Vincent come into Marcellus Wallace's bar in shorts and t-shirts, looking like a couple of dorks, as Jimmy calls them. And you have absolutely no idea why they look like dorks until near the end of the film, when it's because they've shot Marvin in the head.
Yeah, mistakenly.
Yeah, and their clothes are covered with blood. And it's such a smart film, because you can enjoy each maybe half an hour segment in and of itself, but then it pulls together beautifully. It all makes sense mm-hmm. in the end.
I wish my memory was stronger, that I could remember the first time I watched it, because I would have been completely clueless, like Donnie Darko or something, because you don't at that point think, why is that happening? You're just watching it thinking, how cool is this? But the second viewing of this film, when it clicks, a bit like Memento, you just click and go, that is absolute genius.
Yeah.
And it is definitely a film that gets better each time you watch it. It really does. Not that it's a grow and you need to fall in love, but you do see more and more.
Mm-hmm.
It's the universe that's set in. It just seems like a no-holds-barred universe that, you know, it's all about power. It's all about the fact that you can look cool while shooting a gun. And it's a universe that is far beyond the universe that I live in. Because, you know, like, I live in a world where cupcakes is king. But at the same
what are you
time,
on about?
Out of she's out of a
take
tree.
Take that brother's offer, because cupcakes are what?
Cupcakes is king.
Yeah,
you know.
You've never been happy when you see a Victoria Sponge in front of you.
Just get her off. Turn the mic off
how
now.
How friggin' dare you?
Stop her now.
Can we get a buzzer? So every time she does generalism, we just go...
But it electrocutes her. Like on The Simpsons.
But what I'm saying is this...
No, you're not saying
this
anything.
This is Tarantino's world.
So that came from Cupcake?
Yeah, of course it did, motherfucker.
Ben, help us.
Let's get back on target. So one of the things I love in the script for this film is every time Vincent goes to the bathroom, something bad happens.
Oh my God, yes.
Every
time.
I didn't know
it was that.
So check this out. So when he's on the date, or well, it's not really a date, but he's looking after Mia Wallace, he goes to the bathroom in her house. She overdoses on heroin. Then you've got the scene later on, which should technically happen at the end of the film, but we see it midway through the film. It's when he's at Butch's apartment waiting for Butch to come back. He's gone into the toilet reading his Pulp Fiction novel, and then Bruce Willis kills him.
Yeah.
And then at the back end of the film, which should take place towards the start of the film, you see him go to the toilet in the diner, and that's when Honey Bunny and Pumpkin start robbing the place.
Never go to the toilet.
Every time Vincent goes for a dump.
Oh, there we go.
Third cast. Shit goes south. Every time. And it's interesting.
I bet
to
it
me.
Goes thick and solid.
Oh, God. It's weird that I think... Well, it's not weird. It's more sad that John Travolta here gave a performance that's Oscar-worthy, right?
Yeah.
And so did Bruce Willis. And now they're just doing any straight-to-DVD shit.
Yeah.
How do you go from such a height to such a low? And it's not a case of it gradually went down. He's releasing stuff like... What's that one we watched?
First Kill.
First Kill. First Kill and Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
You know, what the fuck is John Travolta doing now? Any old shite.
The problem is that John Travolta's doing a lot of paycheck shit at the minute, but even when he was doing good films, he's such a hit-and-miss actor. Often, to me, he looks like he's acting. You can see the wheels moving. I think the perfect example of that, have you watched The People vs. O.J. Simpson, where he plays the lawyer?
He's so hammy.
He's so hammy, and it's a fun performance, but he's clearly acting, you know,
clearly.
Too much acting. Whereas in this particular film, he just looks natural. He looks like he is Vincent Vega. At no point do I ever feel like I'm looking at an actor on screen. He is just this person, and he doesn't do that very often.
Even Samuel L. Jackson, he's doing a lot of shite now as well. He's not as bad.
He will do anything people pay him for. Because he's so ace, he still gets in a lot of good films as well.
Yeah. He's got the balance.
The thing about Willis as well, he's another one who, he never seems like he's acting. It's the opposite. He seems like he's obviously not acting. He's just Bruce Willis who's turned up. So it's always nice to see him try. And in this film, he's clearly trying. And I always think back to one particular thing. It's after the rednecks have got him and Marcellus Wallace, and he manages to escape. And he's about to leave. He gets to the door, and then he can hear the sounds of Marcellus Wallace being buggered in the basement. And Marcellus Wallace is his enemy. Wallace is trying to have him killed, and he could have just left and got on with his life. And the camera's quite close up on his face, and you see all those emotions wash over him. He's thinking, I don't like this guy, I don't want to help this guy, but also, this is a fate worse than death. I can't do this to anyone. And then he starts looking at the array of weaponry and picks the sword and then goes and helps him. And that's some of the best non-verbal acting I've seen from anyone, let alone Bruce
definitely.
Willis.
And when each of the weapon is bigger and badder and nastier and gorier.
But there's a lot of shots of that. There's one where he's just sitting in a chair and it's just panning in slowly to his face as he's just sitting there. And it's some of the best acting he's ever done because he's given a shit and he isn't just turning up going, can I do Die Hard again but in a different film? He isn't. He genuinely is caring.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because he shows he can do it.
Yeah. He just doesn't do it
very
often
anymore. I don't want to be depressed during this. I don't want to sit here thinking, oh my God, we're going to watch First Kill Part 2, which we said exactly would be the title.
No one should have to do that. I really like Christopher Walken's quick cameo.
Oh, he's a god, isn't he?
He put the watch. I possess. it's a great little story. And again, it's that little section, you know, it's clearly very important because we understand that Butch, this gold watch that his dad had given to him is so important to him. And it's a lovely setup to that whole thing about, you know, when his girlfriend loses the watch and he just goes apeshit, which means the fate of Vincent Vega.
Yeah.
But I think he got nominated for Best Supporting Actor for this, did he?
Willis, I don't think Walken. Willis did. Don't go. Oh, no.
No, he didn't. Oh, shame.
No, Jackson, Travolta and Thurman got nominated for Oscars for this. Oh. But yeah, it is a great little cameo. And another fantastic cameo, arguably the best one, is Harvey Keitel as Winston Walker.
Unbelievable.
Yes. He's so cool, man. Such a badass. And it's an absolute fucking travesty that he's brought that character back for a series of insurance ads on British TV.
All I could think of was that as I was watching the performance. And I love the whole thing about, you know, I'm going to be there in 10 minutes, 9 minutes, 36 seconds later. And now you think, that's a shame. He's helping out some Welsh Hindu with like a broken down
Ford
focus.
It is true. That's exactly what happens on the advert.
Should never have to. A Welsh
what?
Hindu.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it said a Welsh Hindu.
That's an odd one. But he will now quote parts from the film as well. Like, come on, boys, it's time to get him. And you're like, he's on about a mechanic.
Yeah, it's upsetting as well, because it's not only upsetting that Harvey Keitel is doing that, but I have to believe that Tarantino owns the rights to that character.
Yeah.
So he must have given them permission to do that.
It just shows he's skint.
I doubt it. Well, Keitel perhaps.
Yeah, but not Tarantino. But he's gone, help me out, Quentin. I'm absolutely brassic. I need to do these shite adverts that will take any respect gone.
Can he just lend a tenner or something? It's like, look, this will tie over to the week.
Yeah, start a bloody GoFundMe instead of doing them.
Yeah.
Despicable.
Someone else we touched on a minute ago there is Butch's girlfriend, Fabienne, who nearly scuppers the film.
Oh, she's awful.
It's one of the worst singular performances I've seen in any film in history.
She's also Wendy Torrance annoying.
Yes, she is. She is
almost.
She is. She's horrendous. She can't act. She adds nothing to the value apart from the fact that he's got somebody to boff. It's just the worst kind of character. And I'm so happy whenever she's not on a screen.
Yeah.
He should have just ditched her.
He should have just ditched her. He should have got on Zed's motorcycle. Yeah. Sorry, not a motorcycle, a chopper. And just got the hell out of there.
It's the one bad thing about the film.
Yeah, that's it.
Should have got with a taxi driver. There was chemistry with her.
I just want to piss on Ben for a second, right?
Oh, dear.
Do you know what won over this as the best picture?
No, yes, Mark.
Yes, I do. So in the 1995 Oscars, whatever it was, the best picture and best director both went to Forrest a fucking Gump.
Yep.
And do you know what's even more depressing? Forrest Gump didn't just beat Pulp Fiction. It also beat Shawshank Redemption. That was also nominated in the same year. So how that saccharine dipshit film Forrest Gump could win is beyond me. It fills me with rage.
That is a shaken fist.
Yeah.
I see.
In line with the rest of the episode, Forrest Dump.
Yes. Absolutely. When did you first see this film? Because it came out in 1994. We would have all been around sort of 11 years old, something like that at the time. So do you remember how old you were or when you first saw this?
I think I was about 16 when I saw this. And I was living in Germany and we had, obviously, like Sky channels, but there was also this really cool kind of foreign film channel which showed, which was the film channel that I saw Natural Born Killers for the very first time. And so it had Pulp Fiction on a Friday night, I believe, and I think I was babysitting some kids across the road. And they'd gone to bed and I'd heard about it. It was a film that had buzz, so I thought, I'll give it a go. And yeah, the first time I'd watched it, it was really hard to keep up with.
Yeah.
But I just remember as soon as I saw Uma Thurman on the screen with the black bob, the white shirt, the bareless feet, just watching her twist and jive to Chuck Berry, and my attention was immediately taken, and I just thought she was the coolest woman I'd ever seen. And then the whole part about when she's ODing, and I was invested. I watched it, I think, probably a few weeks later, and it's just stuck with me ever since. And 16 years old, man.
Yeah.
Did you go and get a bob cut in your hair the next day?
I think
day?
I did.
Everyone was walking around.
I did at one point in my teen years. But, I mean, come on. Uma Thurman. She's cool, man.
She is amazing. The first time I saw the film, it was when it came out on VHS in the UK. So that would have been about 1996. So I'd have been about 13 or something. And my mum's always been pretty chill with me watching like 18 certificate films. She trusts me to, you know, not go out murdering. So I'd already seen Reservoir Dogs. I was a huge Tarantino fan at that point. So she allowed me to watch Pulp Fiction on VHS at the age of whatever it was. But there was one thing that she wouldn't let me watch, and it was the buggery scene. It was when Marcellus Wallace is being buggered. She insisted on fast-forwarding through that bit, which I always thought was interesting that that's the line. Like, the murderings and whatnot, fine.
The drug overdosing, fine.
But as soon as the gimp's in play, no, you can't see that bit, Ben.
I think we've watched enough here.
Yeah.
That's mad, because most fans are debating what's in the suitcase. Ben's actually going, what the hell happened down in that thing?
Exactly.
That's what most fans are worrying about.
And what was coming up in my mind was far worse than what actually happened.
Yeah. I'm late to the game, dude. I think I watched it at college. I won't claim to be like, oh yeah, I watched it on day release. I didn't. I watched it when I was about 18, 19. But again, then I got the poster at uni.
Yeah,
went on the wall. Everyone did the soundtrack.
Oh my god, we haven't even talked about the soundtrack.
It doesn't even need to be talked about. It's that good. Tarantino is the best person in the whole world after Cameron Crowe at putting music in films and making it so spot on.
Yeah. There's not even a score
no.
in this film.
No.
It's all just original pieces of music, you know, pre-existing pieces of music, I should say.
And John Hughes. But yeah, he is the man at it. I just think it's iconic. As soon as you hear any music from that film, you think of Pulp Fiction.
You know,
and that's a class.
Yeah. It's just, he's got a gift. I mean, if you check out any of Tarantino's other films, he has it worked out. I mean, you watch Reservoir Dogs. Jackie Brown, one of my favourite all-time soundtracks.
Yeah.
You know, with Randy Crawford and Bobby Womack. He has a gift of marrying up film and music together, and it just remains so classical that people can talk about not just the quality of the film, but the quality of the selection of music. It's admirable.
I kind of miss that now, because I think of, like, Hateful Eight was a score, which
it
is great, because it was old...
Yeah.
What's his name?
Ennio Morricone.
That guy. And that guy.
Bad guy.
And then before that we had Inglourious, which was very serious score. So I do want more of a, like a Boogie Nights feel sort of film where we get that.
I worry though, I think the reason why he doesn't do that so much now is because it might seem like he's parodying himself. That being said, his next film is one that's set around the Charles Manson murders. So there's going to be a lot of era-specific music that he could use. So I expect that soundtrack to be pretty sweet.
That would be awesome.
There's talk right now that he's getting Tom Cruise, Leonardo's already on.
Yeah.
It's going to be hot.
Yeah, Uma won't be in it, I don't think.
No.
After recent revelations.
No. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's tainted this.
Leaving it there. The interesting thing that never happened, which is a shame, is that in this film, of course, John Travolta plays Vincent Vega. And then in Reservoir Dogs, Michael Madsen played his brother.
Yes, he did.
And Tarantino always said he wanted to do a prequel with those two guys called the Vega Brothers, but he never did it because by the point where he was considering doing it, they were too old to play younger versions of themselves.
That is annoying.
Yeah, and you couldn't cast it with anyone else. It'd have to be those two.
Oh, God,
dudes.
No. I can't even think of anybody else that would try and fill their shoes, but that would have been so cool.
And it's a shame that he wasn't allowed to play in that universe any further because so many directors and writers have shamelessly ripped it off. There were so many imitators. Like, did you ever see a film called 2 Days in the Valley?
Oh, no. I don't want to.
Yeah, it's a film. It was one of the first films that Charlize Theron was in. I think Eric Stoltz is in it, who's in Pulp Fiction. And it was a pure ripoff. He had things like Boondock Saints. The violence in that was pure Tarantino.
Yeah.
Yep. Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead. There were all these films.
Great
that
films.
Came out. Yeah. All came out in the first sort of 3 or 4 years after Pulp Fiction that were shameless ripoffs. But, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, they say.
Indeed. To a point.
To a point. Yeah. Just ripping it off.
Yes, when you're listening to us, listeners, and you start a podcast and rip us off, we know.
Yes, we
are very aware. I'm spent. I've absolutely jizzed my load all over this film.
You look
that's
exhausted.
That's degrading, isn't it? That's horrible.
You need a lie down and, like, maybe a
mop. Let's stop. So let's score it. So, Ben, Mr. Quentin Tarantino, fanatic, absolutely besotted with the guy. Is it a perfect 10?
Of course it bloody is.
Yes! Gemma.
What he said.
What you said. It's a perfect 10 out of 10 for Pulp Fiction. It was never not going to be, was
it? No, not really.
It's a perfect film and there's a reason why it's in everyone's top 10. Whose rewatch is it next?
It's my go. I'm loving the run of really good films. I'm going to carry on. And of course, we've got Oscar season coming up. Oscar season!
Yay!
Yay! So, have I chosen a good film that was represented in the Oscars in the mid-90s? Ah, yeah. You betcha. On the next rewatch, it's Fargo.
Yes!
It's time for the third and final round of Box Office Brawl. And the team playing this time round are Mark and Gemma, or Pooch and Mark, a.k.a. Team Pork.
I don't like that.
Well, you're having it. And the score they're trying to beat was myself and Mark, Team Barky Bark from last time round. We scored 13 points. I'm going to tell you how the game's going to work. I will give you the name of a film, and the first film, I will tell you how much money it made at the worldwide box office. I'm then going to give you the name of a second film, and you simply have to tell me, between you, whether that made more money or less, higher or lower. There are then going to be 20 that you can do. For every one you get right, you get a point. If you get 5 in a row right, you get a bonus point.
Ooh.
So that leaves you with a theoretical maximum of 24. But because I'm OCD and that number's not round enough for me, I will then just throw an extra point on top of it if you get all of those right.
It's very kind of you.
Yeah?
And it's never been done yet. On 3 episodes, no one's done a whole run of 5.
Yeah, no one's got the bonus point yet, so maybe today's the day. And as it's my turn doing this, I've thrown a little wrinkle into it. No. Chill your boots. Every film that I've picked in my list here are films that we have done as rewatches on Skip to the End.
That's amazing.
Yeah? Oh my God.
If we do get the 5 in a row, dude, can it be called a Benny bonus?
Yeah.
Benny
I like that.
Bonus,
sure.
Yeah.
Just plagiarise it even more.
Yeah.
He's dead. He can't sue us. He is.
Yeah. I was thinking,
Bruce
is
dead.
Fucking then.
Shame.
Oh my God.
Right.
I like Bruce. He's all right.
Yeah.
He never fiddled with kids at the end of the day. So
not that we know of.
No.
He's a good old boy.
Yet. Right. Let's get on with the show.
Yet.
Because they sometimes find out after they're dead.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Not
yes,
from the grave.
A lot of the Savile stuff came out after he was dead, didn't he?
Yeah.
This has taken a turn.
The game.
Let's play the game, shall we?
Let's play the game.
Okay.
Save it.
The first film is Brick. which got or took in $4 million at the worldwide box office.
Right.
And the first one after that that I'm going to throw at you is Donnie Darko. Was that higher or lower in terms of dollars at the worldwide box office?
What was Brick?
$4 million.
Right. We know that Donnie Darko was a bit of a cult, but it was also a bit of a flop. But I think it did a little bit better than Brick.
Brick?
Shit.
That doesn't work?
No.
Okay, Brick.
Sick.
Yeah.
As in, yeah, that was well sick.
I'm going to go higher.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
It's what?
Yes, Donnie Darko did $1.5 million.
That's out the room.
That is a flop.
I know, right?
Bloody hell.
Right. Hey. Hell.
Jinx.
Buy me a cake.
And your next one is Howard the Duck. Higher or lower than $1.5 million?
Definitely just for the duck nipples. People got out. Everyone's like, you need to go and see it for the duck nips.
I always say there's not enough duck nips in films.
Higher.
Higher.
It's quite a bit higher. It's 38 million.
That's awesome.
Rightfully
Everyone
so.
Everyone bloody loves a good duck nip.
Your next one, Blade Runner. Higher or lower than 38 million at the international box office?
Just remember, it flopped big
it
time. But
it
it's
really
got
did.
To be more because it's got to be more. But it's not going to be in much more and you'll be pissed off.
It certainly made lots of losses though. 38 million? Do you think lower?
No, higher, but only a little bit. And it'll be annoying because it should have made billions.
I'm going to go with you then.
Trust
a little
me.
Bit higher. Okay,
just
trust,
a little bit.
I'm trusting you.
So a little bit higher than Howard the Duck at 38 yeah. million? Incorrect.
Blade I'm going to smash this place up.
Blade Runner made $5 million less than Howard the Duck with $33 million. How devastating.
That's a travesty.
Is that?
Are you okay?
Yeah. I can just get through
Howard
it,
the Duck nipples
it
over Rick Deckard.
It. Deckard mm-hmm. needed his nips out.
Yeah. It'd have been the biggest box office smash of all time if he
That's depressing.
Had his little tits out. next one, Napoleon Dynamite. Higher or lower than 33 million?
MTV went crazy for this.
They put a lot of investment into it, and it won loads of MTV awards. I
I'm higher going higher.
Too. Yeah, let's do it.
You're absolutely right. 46
Gosh!
Million.
Yes!
That's awesome.
Next up, Catwoman. Higher or lower than 46 million?
Definitely higher, even though it's shit.
You think?
Yeah, people went to see it because it was Halle Berry and it's the whole Batman universe. It's shite, but everyone still went to see it.
Okay.
Trust me.
Right.
Trust me.
You have three.
Yeah.
This is your second one. Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's
Trust
go.
Me.
Higher.
The boy's right.
Yes!
Catwoman did $82 million at the international box
Shouldn't
office.
Shouldn't have to.
No.
Next up, Bad Santa. Higher or lower than $82
million? Oh. As much as I really want to say higher, I think it probably... I don't know. Bollocks, this game is hard.
I think it did well.
I think it might have done lower. It was funny, but I think it did a little bit lower because I don't think a lot of people would have...
Do you know what? Fuck it. Let me have my final one higher and then that's me done with my things and it's all over to you.
That's not fair.
Yeah, no, that's good. Then you've got three.
Yeah, but then that puts it on me.
I know. Go
we're
higher.
We're a team.
Go higher. Trust me.
Right. What he said...
So you're saying Bad Santa did higher than Catwoman at 82 million? You are incorrect.
Ah!
It
told
did.
You, don't ever trust me.
What did I say?
It did 76 million.
Not that much lower.
No, not too far off. Only 6 million difference. Next up, Sucker Punch. Higher or lower than 76 mil?
Now this notoriously flopped. Oh, I don't think it... I think it...
It's over to you. I'm not allowed. At this moment in time, I would say higher just because...
Yeah.
I think it's
lower.
Okay, go with
Let's
you
get
then.
Let's lower.
Should have gone with Mark, it's higher. Oh, yeah. Sucker
don't
Punch.
Look at me like you're going to kill me.
Sucker Punch did $90 million at the international box office.
What is wrong with
How many points
today?
Have we got, dude? Have we actually got any points?
You've got three.
This is shit.
Not great. But I'm pretty sure we did poorly to begin with. And we rallied in the back half, didn't
and
we?
And we like to keep suspense with the listener.
Yeah.
You're doing
it
on purpose, clearly.
Keep it up,
Jim.
Let's rally.
Next one. Die Hard. Higher or lower than $90 million?
The thing is it only good now because of DVD and being on ITV2 every night?
Exactly, and not just at Christmas.
I think
higher.
Okay, I'll trust
Shall
you.
We? Shall we higher?
I would have said lower, but we'll go with you.
Oh God, no, because I'm now flapping it now.
No, go with what your heart says.
But look what happened last time.
I know, come on.
Higher.
It is higher.
Yeah!
It's quite a bit higher as well. It's $141 million for Die Hard.
So this is restoring my faith. At the start,
Yay!
I was like, I hate this game.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Come on, Team Pork.
Yes. Pork me. Pork me.
Next one, Aliens.
Higher
or lower than $141 million?
Remember we said Aliens.
Mm. Yes, I did.
I remember the 80s was all about big action.
Yeah.
Higher?
I'm going higher.
Higher.
Incorrect.
Lower. Oh, you idiot. I said lower.
What was all this higher nonsense have you had?
It was $131 million.
I'm glad we did a rewatch on that.
Yeah. Next up is an arguably bigger and better film than that. Paul Blart Mall Cop. Higher or lower than 131 million?
Documentaries never do that well at the box office.
Always an indie film. Should we go lower?
Lower.
Lower.
Incorrect.
Paul Blart
Mall Cop inexplicably did 183 million.
I hate myself and I want to die.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
My thoughts exactly.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Next up, Watchmen. Did Watchmen get more or less, higher or lower than 183 million?
God, this is so hard.
I think a lot of comic book fans went, even though the reviews at the start weren't very good, I think the comic book community went, let's do it, so it is higher.
I'm with you, higher.
You're absolutely right, but not by much. 185 million, only 2 million more for Watchmen, but you are right.
I was going to say about 2 million more.
Yeah,
of course you are.
It was on the tip of your tongue.
I know.
No, it was gagging to say it.
Next up, a very recent rewatch, Elf. Higher or lower than 185 mil?
It did unbelievably. Everyone in the world loves Christmas and everyone loves Colin. And not Colin.
Colin!
Colin Farrell! It's Colin Farrell!
Will Ferrell!
Will Ferrell!
Ding that!
Fucking Colin!
Everybody loves Colin. It's a fact.
God. Dark as higher. Fuck film.
We're going higher.
Let's go higher.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Colin and his friends were significantly higher with 229 million.
Don't fucking tweet hashtag Colin, you arsehole listeners.
Don't call our listeners arseholes because you fucked up.
I love them all.
Jesus, Colin. God. Next up, District 9, higher or lower than 229 mil?
Ooh, this was a surprise hit, wasn't it?
I spoke to my mate about this when I interviewed him, and he said it was lower.
You and Neil.
Yeah, me and Neil, we're like that.
All right, if Neil says lower, let's go lower.
It is lower.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
With 211 mil, and just so you know, you've got three in a row at the minute. Stick with it. Next up, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Higher or lower than 211 mil?
Oh, were you alive when this was out?
It was 1978 or something.
We were not alive.
A couple
of
years after Jaws, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were not alive. So remember Steven Spielberg.
I'm going higher for the fact that Jaws was the biggest summer blockbuster and then everyone wanted to see what he could do after that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I reckon it's higher.
Are you going with him on that, Gemma?
I'm going to agree with you, yeah. Yeah, all right, let's do it higher.
You're damn right too.
Yes! One more!
Oh my God, we can do this!
I want a Benny bonus!
I want a Benny bonus!
I said that to him in the shower once.
You didn't ask though, you just took it.
It was a reach around.
That's 307 mil for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So that's four in a row. So this one
no pressure.
Is for five in a row and a Benny bonus.
Oh my God.
The Last Airbender. Higher or lower than 307 mil?
Oh my God. Was this during a time when he was like everyone producing shit after shit?
No, he hadn't done shit. This is the start of the shit, I think.
Oh my God, but it was so shit.
I'm going to stick my neck on the line, and I think it...
I think it's lower.
I think it's higher.
Oh, my God.
Bearing in mind, Mark has used up his shots, so it's up to you whether you go with him or not.
So it's down to you. I want a Benny bonus.
So do I. Lower.
100%?
You're going lower? Incorrect!
Oh, you idiot! I carry you.
Oh, fuck you,
week,
man! No,
I've got to carry you on the game.
Oh,
I could have had a Benny bonus.
Oh, boo-hoo.
The Last Airbender did 320 million.
I told you.
So 13 million more than
who
Close
told you that? Your mate Colin.
Comment.
Yes.
Good old Col. You ready for the next one?
No,
not
where
really.
Where you getting it anyway?
I don't want to play.
Home Alone. Higher or lower than 320 mil?
Higher.
Significantly higher. 477.
Unbelievable film.
Okay.
How many got left?
Four more to go.
I don't want to play anymore.
How many points have we got?
You've got...
We could do this.
This team has crumbled.
Pork can still...
Pork has gone off.
You've got nine.
I'm going veggie.
You've got 9 points.
So it'd be enough to draw.
Yeah.
But
you could get the bonus if you get all of these remaining
teamwork.
Four. Because that'd be five in a row, I think.
Is it?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So if you get all five of these, you win by 1 point.
Turn the mic off.
Imagine the drama.
Fuck you.
High drama here.
The mic off.
Fuck you.
So your next film... Higher or lower than 477 million, The Matrix Revolutions.
No, this was the third one, wasn't it?
I'm definitely saying higher.
I think higher too. I think it...
I reckon it made like 600 or something. Crazy.
Yeah.
Oh dear, what a pity. Never mind, it's lower.
What the fuck?
Sorry, 427 million.
Should have been higher for us in this game.
Never mind, we can draw. Yeah.
Let's just have fun with it.
Consider the bed shat.
But me and Ben win, so I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
So it's all right. Either way, I'm a winner.
Oh my goodness me.
Ready for the next one?
Okay.
The 1989 Batman. Higher or lower than 427 mil?
Lower.
I think lower.
It is lower, but not by much. Four, about 411 mil. Yeah.
A tad.
I was going to say about 410, so.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Two more to go. The Empire Strikes Back, higher or lower than 411 mil?
Oh, higher.
Big movie.
Of course it is. 538 million. And the final one, can you go out with a bang? Inception, higher or lower than 538 mil?
I can confident. I
can't. You can't confidently say the word confident.
I believe it's higher.
I definitely
it's about
think
600
it's
and something.
I think it's yeah.
Even higher than that. It's 810.
Yes! For Nolan.
So well done. You went out with three in a row to give you a final score of 12.
Not bad.
So close. Okay. So that I think that ties with what Gemma and I got in week
That's
one.
Good. So yeah. It just shows she's always pulling us down.
Yeah, the weak link.
Yep.
But,
you can suck a dick.
So Mark and I, Team Barky Bark, are the champions of Box Office Brawl with 13 points.
It feels good to win, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
How's it feel, Jack? Oh, you didn't win. But, so that was good. That was good fun. Good team there, Fork. They're still loving the air just.
There is.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new game show. And at this point, the name... No, we're not even going to give you the
Don't.
Name. No, we're not going to give the concept. Just tune in and find out in 2 weeks.
Now it's time for Skip to the Recommend, that part of the show where we come to you with our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something new, it can be something old, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. Mark, I'm going to throw it over to you first. What is your Skip to the Recommendation this week?
It's a book.
Ooh.
And it's by Corey Feldman. And it's called Choreography. It's not. I wouldn't waste that time on that shite.
What?
I'm joking.
I'm joking.
Don't even.
It's a book called 80 for the 80s by Lane Mayer, okay?
Okay.
So it's a film book. And it's got all about 80 different 80 films. You've got figures, you've got trivia, you've got fun facts, and you've got everything. It's absolutely crammed. So we're talking War Games, Heathers, Gremlins, Lost Boys. It's made for me. I brought it with me because it feels really nice. Oh, feel that, Ben.
It's weighty.
But it's nice and it's thick and it's got a nice feel to it. But this person, Lane Mayer, who used to write a weekly box office report and is known for basically online community, is the ultimate 80s movies fan. I'm talking worse than me. Ridiculous. But it's like a trip down nostalgia lane. I was born in the 80s. Both of you were born in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yep.
Reading this just reminds you why it is the best era for films. It goes into stuff like Cobra. It goes into the ultimate Back to the Future. All these great films. But it's just astonishing, guys. It is like me writing a diary about my 80 favourite films, and it's just incredible. When they're going into The Lost Boys, it'll teach you stuff about Corey you never would have known.
Well, you know, don't test me, because I know a fair bit.
But he writes it.
It's the easiest book to read. I recommend people go out there and buy it, because it's just amazing. Especially if you like horror, like Fright Night and stuff, you'll learn loads of facts about the film you never knew. I don't know how I discovered it. I think I just went on Amazon, and it kind of recommends for you, doesn't it?
Yes.
Police Academy, Fetch, all of them. All those great films.
Fletch.
Fetch.
Stop trying to make Fetch happen.
Sorry.
It's Fletch.
Fletch.
At least you didn't say Felt.
A great book. A great one for the toilet. You know when you're sitting on the toilet and you want something to read that's short? You could just do one film, go back for a poo later on, and then read another one. Unbelievable.
You just handed that to me, and now I know that it's been in your fucking WC.
We've just been tainted by shit.
It's great. All the stuff on Ferris Bueller I recommend. But if you want to go on, I think Amazon has you can just look at a sample.
Yeah.
It's great. Flash Gordon, Kroll, Mannequin, all of them.
You can name all 80?
Yeah.
We've not got all day.
A great book, a really simple, easy read, and it's nice and short.
The text size is massive. It's open up the book. It's like a remedial school book, isn't it?
It is.
Like the Very Hungry Caterpillar.
I had to buy the extended special edition for special people. It's great, guys. If
it
you
does
love
look
80s
cool.
films.
It looks awesome. The front cover is amazing.
It is great, and it's just so, so well done. So that's my one for the week.
Thank you, Mark. Gemma, what is your Skip to the Recommendation this time round?
I've gone onto Netflix and I found myself a cool little three-part black comedy series from 2016. It's called Stag.
Ooh, I'm not familiar. I've
not even heard of it.
So it's currently on Netflix and it's a BBC black comedy starring the likes of Reese Shearsmith, Tim Key, Jim Howick, James Cosmo and Rufus Jones, to name but a few. So it's about a group of friends who head to the Scottish Highlands to celebrate a stag weekend for one of their own. However, these are the type of lads you would not want to spend 5 minutes with. They're obnoxious, they're horrible, they're the type of people who spur each other on to drink their own piss. So basically, they decide they're going to go deer hunting to be men in the forest. But they find out in an explicit manner that they are not the hunter. They are indeed the hunted. Dun, dun, dun.
You've left me completely juiced up.
And because it's a black comedy, there's so many dark moments. So you get gore, but you also get inappropriate laughs. You get actually a very good story. And one thing I really enjoyed about this three-parter is the development of each character. They're horrendous. They're hideous human beings, but they all have their moment of clarity, or they all have their moment where they completely transform from what you saw in the very first scene. And standout performance is by Jim Howick. Now, he's most noticeable in programmes such as Peep Show, so he's Gerard.
Tube up his nose.
He's, and you, others may have seen him in Horrible Histories, Yonderland, and Inside Number 9.
Yes.
He is in the episode The Trial of Elizabeth Gadge.
Nice.
But it's a story with twists and turns. You don't expect where it goes to when you're watching the show. It keeps you guessing until the very, very end. And also, it's worth noticing about the cinematography. We at Skip to the End are very big fans of beautiful scenery shot. Very beautifully and with detail. And it's outstanding work. And it's by a guy called Rob Kitzman. Now, he's done The Wrong Man's episodes and Chewing Gum to his CV, but it is nothing in comparison to what he's done with Stag. If anything, if the story doesn't hold you, just the whole look of the whole Scottish Highlands is just a thing of beauty. It's really, really great, dark, twisted fun. And what I love about it, it was just something I just plucked out. It was one of those, you know, you might like this. It's kind of like what Amazon did. And I loved it. I watched the first episode, I watched the second episode, then I watched the third one, all in a row. Absolutely fantastic.
That sounds great. I've never heard of it, but I'll give it a go. Yeah. I mean, the fact that it's got Tim Key in. Tim Key's my boy.
I love him so much.
Reese as well. He never does anything bad.
Yeah. I do like when Netflix does that recommendation thing, because sometimes you'll find a real gem.
Yeah.
But my Netflix keeps trying to insist that I watch something called Trailer Park Boys.
Oh, don't. No, it just looks atrocious.
And I'm having none
of it. That bloke's like that.
It's not funny. It's like a really crap redneck Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Oh, that's sold it to me.
Don't do Blu-ray.
Nah, shite.
My pick this week is another Netflix show. Well, it's on the Netflix in the UK anyway. It's on NBC in America, and it's a sitcom called The Good Place.
I really want to watch this.
Oh, my word. So The Good Place stars Kristen Bell as a self-involved and morally dubious woman who dies and then wakes up in The Good Place, which is a neighbourhood of the afterlife where good people are rewarded for living good lives. She soon realises that there's no way she was actually meant to be there because she didn't live a good life, so she then has to try and hide this fact from the other citizens of The Good Place, including the architect of it, played by Ted Danson. And it's so funny and so warm and so smart and so charming. Kristen Bell is one of the most underrated actresses on earth. She is superb. She's so believable in playing the vain, egocentric version of her character, Eleanor. But then she plays it beautifully when she inevitably transforms into a person who actually deserves to be in The Good Place. Ted Danson is unbelievable. He is, in my opinion, doing his best work since Cheers. He is so lovable and so funny in this show. But the true MVP of this particular programme is a woman called Jamila Jamil.
Now,
are you familiar with Jamila Jamil, as in the former Radio 1 DJ and presenter of T4?
I was going to say, is it the same one?
It's the same one. So Jamila Jamil had like a 10-year TV presenting and radio presenting career. She decided one day to up sticks to LA to try a new career. This is the first thing she's ever been in terms of acting. It's her first acting performance, and she is absolutely amazing. She plays this pompous and patronising Brit who's always name-dropping her famous friends at any given opportunity. And she's just hilarious. She is the source of the most reliable laughs in this show. You wouldn't think that she'd come effectively out of nowhere, has no acting background. People in America are going crazy over her. They assume she's had this long acting career. It's the first thing she's done, and she's knocked it out of the park, and she's absolutely brilliant. It's a show that you're going to like because it comes from good pedigree. It was created by a chap called Michael Schur, who you will know as Moe's from The Office.
Cousin Moe.
And not only was Michael Schur a writer on The Office, he also created Parks and Recreation.
Even better.
And he co-created Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh. Wow.
So this is a guy who knows funny, and this is some of the most high-quality comedy you'll see. And the thing that makes this head and shoulders above anything that I've seen recently is Most comedy shows, sitcoms, and all TV shows, really, they thrive on stasis. They thrive on things never really changing, because TV, for the most part, is comfort food. People come back to what they know. They don't want it to change too much. This show says, fuck all of that. And it regularly just blows up the status quo. I can't say how or why it does that, because it's massive spoilers. It's something you need to go and seek out for yourself.
Okay.
But the show has no interest in repeating the same patterns week after week. It's so unpredictable. The closest possible thing I can compare it to is it's like Lost. It's more like Lost than your generic TV sitcom.
My mind's blown. I'm like, I need to see this. It's
absolutely amazing. The cast are wonderful. The writing's brilliant. It's so smart. There are only two seasons. I think each season is 13 episodes. The second season finale was last week, so all 26 or so episodes are available on UK Netflix now. It will be back on NBC and Netflix again by the end of the year. You owe it to yourself to go and check this show out, because it is that damn good.
It is on my list to watch. I've been dying to watch it, but just for some reason, I look at it and I go, yeah, I'll watch something else. But I will watch it in time for the next episode that we do.
I'm going to watch it soon. Is there many of them?
As I literally said 30 seconds ago, there are about 26 20, episodes.
Too many, dudes. I'm not doing many. That. I'm not doing
only
that.
22 minutes each, pal. You'll
it's
be all
still
right.
A lot. It's a commitment that's too beyond. I'm not doing it.
Well, all it means is you just don't watch First Kill again. Okay.
Have we had any good recommendations come through on the old beautiful social media?
Do you know what? We've had bloody loads. It's the first time we put this out to our listeners to get them to recommend to us things that we should be enjoying. And the response has been overwhelming. We simply haven't the time to go through them all, so I've picked some of my favourite ones. So on Facebook, Lorna DeMarco has said, coincidentally enough, just started getting into Parks and Recreation. It's amazing, so funny, and can't believe it's taken me this long.
Oh my God, you are in for such a ride.
Yeah, wow.
All huge fans of that one. Rupert Denham Hall on Twitter, @Hall_business, has said he's reading Uncommon People by David Hepworth, which covers the rise and fall of rock stars from Elvis to Kurt Cobain, with info on each year from 1955 to 1995.
That sounds like a purchase.
Yeah, it looks a good read. And the Rupert put a picture up on Twitter of it, and David Bowie's on the front cover. That's
sold.
Oh, that's one I'll be getting, sweet. I think. On Facebook, both Joanne Cole and Darren Wolfe have said The Last Man on Earth.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I want to see this.
Oh, so yeah, good.
I think the first two or three seasons are available on Amazon Prime in the UK. Yeah. It's, as Darren says, it's a brilliantly embarrassing Will Forte comedy, and it's even more cringeworthy than The Office, which is true at times.
Yeah, and props to Kirsten Schaal. She's fantastic.
Yeah, Kirsten Schaal's brilliant in it as well.
I'll check that out. Mm.
On Twitter, Ragnar's Bastard @Gunnar Armstrong has said, listening to Lantern by 36 Crazy Fists. And he said, I'd liken it to the film Hellraiser when the boxes first opened.
Jesus.
Yeah, I haven't listened to 36 Crazy Fists since their first album. I think it was called Bitterness the Star. I had that as a teenager.
Christ, that takes me back. That's proper Kerrang days.
Big time. Jay on Twitter @green.emo has said, Lucifer with an exclamation mark. One of the best things on TV at the minute. Really hoping @OriginalFunko make pops for this. So if you're listening, Sully, get some Lucifer pops going.
Yeah.
Have either of you watched Lucifer?
I haven't, no.
Again, it's based on a DC property, and it's on Amazon Prime in the UK. And it's one of the most turn-your-brain-off, have-fun shows you'll ever see. Welsh actor Tom Ellis plays the lead character of Lucifer.
Tom Ellis?
Yeah. And he's so funny and so charming. I absolutely love Lucifer.
He's great. Cool. He's in Miranda, though.
He was in Miranda, correct, yeah.
A lot of people have been in Miranda.
Whee!
Shocking. Absolutely shocking. Mosley Shores on Instagram has said, Star Trek Discovery, so good. Have you been watching this?
I'm yet to discover this.
Brilliant. My other half loves it.
I want to, but it's again, I just want to kind of, why am I waiting?
Yeah.
Just do it.
But it's not all in one go, is it?
No, you get one episode a week.
And last night it was in America because I saw people saying, don't spoil it on Twitter.
Yeah. That's right. So on Netflix, we get a new episode every Monday. I've been watching it. It's the first Star Trek series I've ever watched. Thoroughly enjoying it.
Brilliant.
Wow.
Cool.
Peter Charbonneau on Twitter @pcharbonneau21 has said, reading Substance by Peter Hook from New Order, and he says it's insanely enjoyable. And the interesting thing about this is when Peter put this tweet out saying that this book was insanely enjoyable, Peter Hook then replied to him saying, I'll see you on tour.
Oh no my way. God! I'm a huge New Order, Joy Division fan. That's something I want to get.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Few people on Twitter, Mr. Glass Half Empty, Junaid Hussain and Jim Bob Squarepants have all said Black Lightning. And Mr. Glass Half Empty says it's the best superhero show DC have done yet.
Wow.
We're getting this weekly on Netflix at the minute. I think there have been two or three episodes. I've watched the first two. Enjoying it?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I don't think it's necessarily the best one they've done, but I'm digging it so far.
Cool.
Worth a look.
I might wait till it's all done and then binge them.
Yeah. Wolfmanly75 on Instagram has said, "The Wicked and the Divine is still managing to be one of the most consistently excellent comic books for some time. I've got the first few collections and I haven't yet cracked a single one open, but I hear good things. It's from Image Comics, who are the best comic house in the game." So yeah, I'm not surprised he's picked this. It's known to be great stuff.
I'm absolutely loving all these. There's
me
so
too.
Much variety.
I want to hear more.
Yeah.
And then our final one, a couple of people on Twitter, Dan Rhodes and Ben Reed, have both said The End of the Fucking World on Netflix.
Yes.
And a lot more people said that, actually.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was going to be my skip to the recommend on this episode, but when I did see a lot of social media for it, I thought, I'm just going to let the people talk.
Is it that good?
It's fantastic. It gives me very much the whole True Romance style vibes of the two main characters.
The premise of what I read online looked unbelievable.
Like, even down to the way how they dress in the second half of the series.
Oh.
It is so cool. It's so badass. And again, it takes you to a place that you don't expect to be when you're first watching it. It's outstanding.
That's going on my list.
There you go.
Really, really great show.
So there you go. Everyone out there, please keep sending us your recommendations. You can get us on Twitter at STTEpodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast or on Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast. Or if you're that way inclined, you can email us podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk and we'll be back with more recommendations in 2 weeks' time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. And you know what? That's gone better than I thought it would, because we're recording on a Monday night, which we don't usually do.
Yeah.
We're not usually in the right mindset for it on a Monday, but it's been great fun, hasn't it?
It also means we can't drink a lot because we've got work tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that's always yourself. A bit of a struggle. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's tough.
I tell you who could drink. Colin Farrell.
He could. He could drink.
He could drink with his elf buddies.
Good old Colin. Mark, have we had any listener questions through this week?
It's funny that you ask. We have. We've had Matthew Evans on Facebook that says, "Oh, it's a question just for me." I don't think I've ever had a question just for me.
Oh, shall we bob off then, Gemma?
Yes,
what's the point?
I don't think I've ever had one.
Question for Mark time.
Matthew's my friend. Oh, Facebook question friend.
Question friend.
He has asked, "What does Mark watch when editing? I'm curious, what makes good background viewing when you're supposed to concentrate?"
I'm hoping the answer is nothing, because you should
yes,
be doing
undivided
the
attention just to that. This is the bit when I'm going to get ripped. So, I used to watch stuff like The Office, but then I'd stop because I'd get into I'd start enjoying the TV series.
Fetties.
Bob Ross art. He has his little show, and
no,
it's called Chilling with Bob Ross on Netflix. And he just sits there, smiles, paints away, tells you stories about little squirrels and stuff. The best stuff to have on in the background. You'll never get agitated. Whatever we do on the episode that could piss me off doesn't happen, because he's painting away and he's like, "Just watch the flowers and I paint the colours."
Isn't that what Carol said in Walking Dead?
It's so, so peaceful.
Just look at the flowers, look at the flowers.
So peaceful and so soothing. And he's just, you'll be like editing and look up and he's just a bit of a, you know, like a bit of a yellow spread. And then you look up again and he's done a whole river and a bank and flowers. Yeah. That guy's a genius.
I get that. Because as you say, if you're watching something like The Office and you're trying to concentrate on the editing and then Kevin comes out with a big pot of chili, you're going to be watching that.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas if Bob Ross is just doing a bridge or something, you're not going to be drawn into it.
He's just going to
The only thing is, sometimes when he cleans the brush, he goes... And it distracts you. You look up because you want to see me. And he'll always say, "You just got to beat that bad boy." And it's ooh. But then I tried doing Friends recently, and again, you stop and you look up. So Bob Ross, there's a recommendation for you. Warriors, which is at Worry10RZ. Which films and acting performances would make your 2017 Razzies shortlist?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think the Razzies are really good anymore. There was a time when they would genuinely highlight the worst films of the year, and now they just highlight things they like sticking the knife into, whether they deserve it or not. For me, the top five worst films of the year going for the Razzie should be Ghost in the Shell, Valerian, The Mummy, The Circle. Have you seen The Circle on Netflix?
This, with Emma Watson. Hanks,
Absolutely atrocious. And The Emoji Movie, which I haven't seen, but fuck that movie. And then for me, acting-wise, I wouldn't even have a full category. These would get the awards. Dane DeHaan in Valerian and Emma Watson in The Circle. Just give them the awards and be done with it.
Dane DeHaan is made for the Razzie's worst performance. Mm-hmm.
And the woman, is it Cara Delevingne?
I thought she was
okay. All right.
But there's not much worse actress performances of the year.
Also, Bright was a fucking abomination.
I didn't mind it.
I thought it was terrible.
I'm not having it. I like it.
No, big pile of shit.
Valerian for movie.
Oh,
outstanding. Absolutely deserved. Wicked. Andrew Donlan, which is at Hey Cactus. I love these Twitter handles.
Hey Cactus.
What film characters do you feel represent you as a person? Having listened to Mark and me, And here in his favourite films, I see him as Will from Almost Famous, a fan on tour with the band, but could be wrong. Ben, Gemma, what about you?
I love your subtle little plug there. So
that's Mark and Me on markandme.com and Spotify.
Well, you tell us yours first then. Is he
it
right?
It is. Yeah? I can't argue. That's the worst thing. I want to be like, no, do you know what? It's not. It's Jason Mewes, but it's not. It's
why would you want that?
Snoochie Boochies.
It is, Will, all day long. Almost Famous, 100%. Yeah. Well done, Andrew. You know me better than anyone. Better than these two, I think. Who would you be?
I would be the lady from our next rewatch. I'd be Marge Gunderson.
Yeah.
Really?
I do. Because what I love about Marge, and I'm going to try not to delve too much into it, but she sees light in a dark world. Like, yeah. the dark situations that she comes across, she'll always look for the good. And she's on the right side. She's on the good side. And I just think she's an all right character, I suppose. You know, I'm not going to go into
that's
it,
enough.
Yeah,
next
whatever.
Rewatch.
You know,
yeah. And stick around for yeah. more.
And this really, I think, highlights the difference between you and I, Gemma. So you've looked at the woman who finds the good in the bad. Mine's the opposite. Mine would be Michael Douglas's character from Falling Down.
Yep.
Honestly, he's yep. me all over, man. It might make me sound like a fascist, but on an almost daily basis, something will piss me off to the point that I wish I could just start swinging a baseball bat at motherfuckers.
Usually me.
Yeah, mainly. But you know what I mean? I empathise with him completely yep. when he just snaps, because that's my life.
I want to give you a hug.
You don't. He'll get angry.
Not yet.
Yeah, he's a very, very angry Larry David, aren't you? You really are. And our final question comes from Damien Bullock, who said, do you think the Oscars are out of touch with modern audiences and kind of have prejudice against genres like sci-fi?
Absolutely, yeah.
Of course you do. Honestly, Damien, you've hit it right on the head.
Yeah, there are several genres that the Oscars don't tend to get on board with. I think it's mainly due to the age of the majority of the voters. Sci-fi always gets overlooked. Superhero films get massively overlooked. That's why Dark Knight wasn't nominated for Best Film, even though it absolutely was one of the best films that year. Another genre that gets overlooked is horror. So it's really, really heartening to see Get Out get so much love this year.
Mm-hmm. I was very pleased about the responses that got. But I think a change needs to be done in terms of the technicality of a film. I mean, Blade Runner 2049, why that was not listed in Best Picture, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Why Denis Villeneuve didn't get an Oscar credit for direction is beyond me. But then again, this year for the nominees, I'm actually really pleased with what is for Best Director and what is for Best Picture. Maybe take out, I don't know, like The Post. I don't know.
Meh. Yeah.
No, it's just remove it. Put 2049 in there. But yeah, I think in terms of genres, I do think it needs to change.
Yeah, sci-fi needs it. It deserves everything it should have, and it's annoying. We joke and say that film's Oscar bait.
Mm.
Break the tradition.
Yeah, absolutely. And things like sci-fi, they tend to get in the below-the-line categories. Your technical, your sound, your effects and stuff.
Cinematography.
But they rarely break through into the big categories.
And give Nolan his Oscar that he deserves. Please,
yes,
I think
time.
He'll get it.
Not this year, though.
No.
As much as I like Dunkirk, he's not the most deserving this year, is he?
No.
Actually, you got a good point there.
We will discuss the Oscars in
we
more
will,
detail
yes.
on the next episode. So, yeah, we'll be giving you our predictions in 2 weeks' time.
Coming up.
What else have we got on the next episode?
That's a great question. Well, our main review is one that I've been looking forward to so very much. Marvel's Black Panther.
Oh
wow.
My God, yes.
Early reviews that no one really cares about until ours comes out, but are that it's absolutely awesome and completely different. And the closest thing to it is Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
The film that started this podcast.
Absolutely right.
There you go.
Yeah,
blimey.
Yeah, yeah. What's our rewatch, Gemma?
Our rewatch is going to be the Coen brothers' classic Fargo.
And it is a classic as well, isn't it? We've covered that's the rewatch done. Yeah. What more can
we'll
we
pick
say?
Something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Who are we masturbating over?
The one and only Robin Williams. And I have no idea what I'm... I think I just need to spend the whole week visiting his old work because there's so much.
Yeah. Oh, what? Sorry, one's just popped into my head and I'm like, oh, God.
I know what it is.
Yeah.
I can take a picture of it now.
Yes! That's the one.
Yeah.
And then my topic choice. Oh, Gemma's just thought
one. Yeah,
what
sorry,
have you thought
just,
of?
I'm thinking of the exact same thing.
Oh, you just took a second to click.
Yeah, sorry.
Click. Brilliant.
See what you did.
Nice. In an hour.
And our top three next time round will be the top three next big things. Who are the actors and actresses that you think are going to break through that glass ceiling into the A-list? They could be young kids who've only been around a little bit, or TV actors, whatever it is, however you want to describe it, it's up to you. But those people who are just about to break through into the top rung of the business.
Would you be furious if I voted for myself?
Yes.
Oh,
okay,
my God.
Just checked. So I think I will be famous one day.
If you can prove it, if you can give me compelling evidence to suggest
Mac
that that's accurate.
Too. When it comes out, you won't realise, but I'm going to be playing Mac in that suit.
Oh, you'll always be almost famous.
Oh,
no. Synergy.
Wow. That's the perfect way to end the show. See you in 2 weeks. Wow, stone you, read my